Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
We can confirm.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Holiday festivity in the air for this Weekend Confirmed holiday special, folks. We have an awesome show lined up for you today. I actually put some planning into it.
It's almost too big.
It's almost too big to fit into this, but we're going to try and make it fit into this compressed format. Get it compressed.
There's just, I can't believe no one said
Yeah. Best behavior.
It's happening.
We are
on our
That's
best
right.
holidays.
That's because we've only started drinking. We've only just started drinking. So I'm going to give you the quick opening cast here. We'll be rotating in and out through the day because we have a number of guests who are here today. Thank you very much to everyone who has shown up and to your various respective employers who let you be on the show, which is awesome. Of course, my partner in crime, Jeff Cannata, is here.
Excited. Loving it.
He's ready for the holidays.
Holiday cheer.
He brought the Fireball with him today.
I did. There's a lot of booze here.
There's
a lot of whiskey.
A lot of whiskey. There's some whiskey. Be all right. Don't worry. It'll be all right. Wait till we get to the 2013 preview show later on. That'll be when the good time's happening.
Yeah. Next week, when you guys get that show, just remember, you were warned.
But I put planning into this. I've been listening to the feedback, and I'm going to make sure that we stay on at least one rail. I'm not going to say we're staying on the rails. We might come off a rail.
I'm a crazy train.
We might come off one rail. That's right. Andrew Yoon is here as well.
Hi. Whoa.
That's where you say
whoa.
Hello.
Hey.
Jeff's buzzing pocket. And Christian Spicer looking Trey hipster today with his beanie and...
Yes, I am here. It is great to be here. You and I are wearing almost the exactly same thing. I had a beanie on, but then you also had these classy leather loafers with no laces in them. You have your ironic ho-ho-ho shirt on.
I'm rocking the Christmas spirit, man.
How is that ironic?
Yeah, why is that ironic?
Yeah, it's not ironic.
Definitely.
That's a genuine ho.
That is the happiest damn Santa Claus you have ever fucking seen right there.
I think it's Coca-Cola Santa, if I'm not mistaken.
But I don't, yes, I am, I dress like a hipster.
We're going to have the slap happiest Christmas you ever saw.
Is this your first post-baby episode?
It is. First, long time.
Oh, shit.
Who brought the dad?
Hey, so
are you going to tell us to finish our vegetables and clean our room now?
I'm going to tell you that you can still wear skinny jeans and have babies.
But your wife can't.
Oh!
I'm joking.
That was joking.
Oh, I get it. You call my wife fat. Thanks. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
That'll go
cold-blooded.
It's going to go over.
It's the most
she doesn't
wonderful
listen.
And also
she doesn't tune into the show, right? Hope to God not.
Yeah. They actually play it to the baby at night in the crib. So
well, the show will make anyone fall asleep. So.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolute truth. And James Stevenson.
Hello.
Your wife's fat. Oh, sorry.
Wow.
What were you saying about on the rails, Garnet?
Let's keep it civil, guys.
And Christian doesn't even drink. That's the problem, is Christian doesn't even drink.
No, he's just a dick.
Yep.
He did grace us with stanky dick, so we know how that goes. Hey, it's been an awesome 2012, and in this holiday show, which I have, put a little organizational powers into, I went back and looked through all of the things that came up during 2012, and the first thing that I figured out, by the way, laying the show out, we're going to go through great games that came out across 2012, some of the big topics, GDC, E3, all sorts of things. We talked a lot about handhelds last year, too. People love it when we talk about handhelds. Obviously, we know a lot about handhelds. Clearly, we are the handheld experts. But what stood out to me is that we've been through this whole last couple of weeks looking at award shows and starting to think back about 2012, and there's been this sentiment out there on a lot of social networks of, well, 2012 wasn't a good year for video games. You know what? Bullshit. It was an excellent year for video games. It was a great year for
video
games.
In fact, can I derail one quick second and just say, before we start looking back at the year, I'm here to tell you, there's a great game that was released just a couple of days ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Life is Magic, and it's on the iOS, and I want to proselytize about this game.
It's on the iOS?
I love it. I love it. It is amazing, and I'm totally addicted. It's so just real quick, let me tell you about
this. By
the way,
as
you're going to
want to download it. John Davison works for the company who...
That's how I found out about
it. So if you guys hear about it and there's no connection, that is how Jeff...
That's how I found out about it. And he's a friend, but I downloaded it. It is free to download, so there's that.
So it have microtransaction hook in it?
A lot.
A lot. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I wouldn't be talking about it if I didn't genuinely love it, and I do. Here's the thing that's cool about it. It's this idea that I've been talking about for a long time. A lot of people have been talking about for a long time. As soon as we had, you know, the four squares of the world and everything, it was, well, there should be a fantasy role-playing game that's set in the actual real world using Google Map information. Well, Life is Magic is that game.
But it would be a more fantasy game if they used Apple Maps.
Hey-o!
Wow. Good one.
So you give it, you allow it to use your location on your iPhone or your iPad, and you build your character, and then it populates this world based on your actual location at the time that you're playing it and the buildings and stores that are around you. So, for example, I live very close to Meltdown Comics on Sunset Boulevard. Meltdown Comics is a store where I go in and buy my gear for my guy.
And it's also where Double Jump's going to be on January 11th.
Whoa, what? Hey, I'd love to go to that show. That sounds like a fun place to go.
What the hell? Are you guys selling my whole goddamn podcast down the river in the first segment?
No, Jeff is.
Seriously, though, Double Jump's going to be on January 11th at Meltdown Comics. Anyway, so it's really cool because there's like restaurants are restaurants. You know, you go into
restaurants are restaurants.
Yeah, but fantasy style. And you go in and you do... Anyway, so that's just one cool aspect of it that I think, and it makes me anyway.
So I have that's one class. Are all those things then sponsored? And do you have to, like, if you're a restaurant, to be okay? So they're just pulling.
They're just pulling the data okay. from the and it's you just the name of the place is the same name of the place, but you go in and it's the video game. You know, it's like a potions place is a potions place, and
McDonald's makes you sick,
right? but then it's got this really awesome dungeon mechanic that's sort of almost like a roguelike meets a Japanese role-playing game. So it's got that turn-based Japanese role-playing game combat system that works really cool, and you can build your party out of actual people you know who are playing the game. So you have your character, and then you have two other slots that are open for your real friends to be put in as the other characters, which is rad. And as they level up, you get the benefits of that. The items that they equip to their character, you get the benefits of. So it's like an MMO in that sense, but asynchronous MMO in a lot of ways. The graphics are spectacular. It's really this beautiful art style. But what I really fell in love with is the combat system. It's this, like I said, Japanese role-playing combat system where you have a series of slots that can be filled up with elemental types. And based on your character and the rest of the characters in your party, you'll cast magic that is that elemental type that'll fill up one of those slots. And then you can use those to do even more powerful magic. So you have to constantly decide how you're going to fill up those slots. It's almost like Magic the Gathering in the sense that you have these elemental resources that you're then going to apply to other spells. Super fun. And it's got this great push your luck mechanic when you go into dungeons, because each dungeon is a certain number of levels deep, and you go into the first level of the dungeon, fight something. If you beat that, you can continue on and risk what you've already looted and the gold that you've gotten to keep going, or you can pull out and keep the stuff that you got so far.
You know,
so
it's always safer to pull out.
Well, the pullout method isn't always safe, let me just say that it's this wonderfully addictive mechanic of, like, oh, I know I can just...
He just, like, kind of, like, it was like a little bump in the road. Like,
well, you know, it's not unexpected.
It is a pretty addictive mechanic. I can concur with that also. Yeah, well.
Anyway, so you're...
As long as you repeat and practice.
Your magic resources and your health and stuff carries over from fight to fight as you go deeper into the dungeon. So you can sort of set yourself up in one fight for the next fight. It's brilliant and it's awesome. The devilish part is that while it is free, you can microtransaction yourself to death. So let's say you overextend and you go deeper into the dungeon than you intended or than you were safely able to do. You die, and it says, well, you died and you're going to lose all the stuff you've collected so far in the dungeon. But if you pay $4.99 right now, you'll save all that stuff.
Ooh.
It's also got that nefarious mechanic, which is sort of good and bad in the sense that you have a certain amount of MP,
mm-hmm.
and once you use that up, and everything you do in the game costs MP to do, so going into a store and buying something, going into the dungeon, whatever, costs MP, And once you are used up all that MP, you can't play the game anymore. Until you, and it just generates MP over time. But if you want to pay a little cold hard cash, you can generate your MP back right now and keep playing. So that's a pretty common mechanic with these sort of, you know, Farmville-esque games. But the game is gorgeous. It's awesome. It's got a really bunch of really fun ideas in it. And I highly, highly recommend people checking it out. I've been playing it all day and I only stopped when my MP ran out. But it's cool. When you level up, your MP gets restored. So it's like you try to time it out so that you use up all your MP right at the time when you're about to get enough experience to level up. And you've got all your friends in your party. See how, look, like it's the real world.
We're looking at the, by the way, I have phone out. And Jeff already convinced me, because he really, what he wanted was for me to join his party.
I need people in my party.
I need people in my party. Yeah. Can you join my party, please? So yeah, I see it. And then like the roads are there and they're all listed off the map view.
And the real places, like look, if you click on that.
If I click on a place, it's Real Food Daily.
Which
yes.
is a real place. And
Volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. All right, they're real places. Hey, is Shitty Sushi
REI.
In here?
REI.
Oh, that means
I
shitty.
I don't see how bored you all are.
Oh, I man. I point that out. Andrea's like.
Andrea's in the other room.
I know.
Drinking.
Dude, Shitty Sushi's not even on here.
It isn't?
No, look, it should be right here at the corner. It should be Shitty Sushi. Shitty Sushi should be right there at the corner.
It's not shitty. It's good.
It's not good.
All right, back on rails.
Yeah, really.
2012.
Oh, look, Hooters.
I to say that.
Hooters
cool
is
game.
There. Oh, my God, it's great. Let's go to Hooters.
Yeah, and you like.
And if I go to Hooters, I get wings and boobs.
See? Boom.
Welcome. Your party is already seated. Jesus, God, this is ridiculous.
It's a cool game. Anyway, I just want to point that out because people are going to dig it.
So you like the idea of geolocation relevant fantasy games?
I think it's slick, and it you can get these travel tokens so you can travel to New York or Chicago.
Like the idea of Nier on the Vita?
Yeah.
You guys who are there over there drawing pictures and have been sleeping through all this and completely checked out, do you care about geolocation in your fantasy games?
Nope.
You don't think it's a cool idea?
It can be. I think
it's cool when it's built like from the ground up, which this sounds like it is.
Yeah.
You know, I've always thought about like, you know, how could geolocation be used in a game that I would want to make, for example, you know?
Yeah.
So. I think the question is, how much do you really want the real world intruding into your fantasy world? Like, do you really want it to get to a point where you're playing this geolocated game? Let's say there are hundreds of thousands of other people playing this geolocated game. And now suddenly they're like sitting in Starbucks and they're looking around going, oh, look, someone else is playing here. I wonder, it could be them. I wonder if I can play with them.
Why is
no,
that
I
bad?
Don't.
Yeah, why is that a bad thing?
It could be creepy as shit.
Is she hot?
What?
Well, that's a good question. That actually is a good
question.
You're
finding like-minded people that are equally passionate in this game, you know? It's like running into someone with a Game Boy on the street playing Boktai.
I liked the whole Nier thing.
That's an interesting comparison, actually. It is like running. You're right. Boktai and such games, obviously, on DS, way ahead of their times. Way ahead of their times. Street Pass.
Street Pass is kind of cool. I like Nier better because I can see like what people near me are actually doing. Like, you know, being able to see, and not just one game, right? Like, I'm on my Vita. Oh, that guy's playing Gravity Rush. That's cool. Like, maybe I can send him... Like, that sort of stuff is a little more interesting to me than... And even Miiverse, to some extent. Like, some of the things you see going on there and the drawings people put up, that
yeah.
kind of is interesting.
Oh, the Miiverse drawings are actually really cool.
Well, this game is cool because each of the dungeons, it shows who's the current leader for that dungeon, and you can sort of own your area, and there's a sort of PvP aspect of competing for real estate in the real world.
And
so
you know
it's
there
got
have
this,
been...
like, you know... A four square mayor thing, but in a game.
Gaming.
You know, the fantasy approach. I have not seen a fantasy skinned one, but there have been gang war sort of games like this already,
mm-hmm.
where you like own different parts, different shops in your neighborhood, and you like got to collect bag money from them, and like you could take over, and like when friends went there, or other folks went there, then you'd earn money. There's been other games that have used this geolocation mechanic before.
No magic, no buy.
No magic, no bite.
It's got magic. It's got a really excellent magic system, I think.
I am really curious, though, still. Like, you guys were very dismissive of this idea of just being randomly introduced to people throughout the day. I'm just not sure that, like, you say, they're like-minded. I mean, they like-minded to the extent that they're playing games with us, but, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you want to meet everybody you come across on the street?
Well, why do you have to meet them?
Because that's what I'm saying is, like, we're all walking around now playing this game. It could become kind of this weird virtual... I don't know, like virtual extension of the world where I'm playing a game.
I think you get used to that. It's kind of like when you see someone, like I'm from Houston, so if I see someone in an Astros hat, I'm not like, oh, you from, like, that happens sometimes, but not always. It's kind of that
thing.
It might give you a conversation starter if you're looking for it, but I don't think we're going to enter a world where people are just like, gamer, 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 you know, like chomping at the bit to meet each other.
All right.
But I think geo-based...
Female gamer?
I mean,
single female gamer?
A novelty. I don't know if it makes this game better or worse than... I'd rather have a well-designed world, and if they're able to use geolocation to make that...
That's cool.
Like, add elements to it, that's cool, but it I feel like right now it's still kind of a gimmick that...
Well, I was the other game I was playing on iOS this week was, because it was free, was the release of Bard's Tale, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite... It's literally the game that got me into role-playing games was the original Bard's Tale on the Apple.
Not the one you were playing, because you're playing the In Exile one iOS.
It comes with the original trilogy.
Oh, really?
I literally downloaded it and haven't touched the new one, have only played
the throwbacks. Because you know the new one is actually quite fun.
I haven't even played it. I know it's got a sense of humor.
It's
and the
really
whole thing.
Funny. It's really funny.
The walk down memory lane of that original trilogy is amazing because it brings back so many memories, and I literally haven't seen those graphics, and they're so evocative for me in my
back
childhood.
Back to Scarabray.
But it's got mechanics that are so amazing for its time. Like, you can import characters from other games. You can import characters from Might and Magic, from Ultima. Like, your party can be made up of people from other games. Like, why aren't companies doing that? That's a rad idea. That is a rad idea. Anyway.
I think it's probably because back then... It was text. The character data was literally like a comma-separated value table. Here are their values. We'll just assign them into our spots as well. We'll use the same spots. They'll line up. No big deal.
But the reason I brought it up is that, you know, if you guys can imagine... If you've ever seen that game, it's like you're walking down a corridor of just boxes, cubes, really, with faces pasted on them of graphics. You could easily make an iOS game like that and steal from Google Street View and make, like, I'm walking down the street in my neighborhood and I turn in and walk into a store, and I think that'd be rad.
I'd never have to leave the house.
Yes, it might be a gimmick, but I think it'd be cool.
Anyway. All right, can we get this back on the holiday?
Yes.
Can we get back on the holiday train? God, Polar Express.
I need to talk about that stuff. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, by the way, what was the name of the game so the people who are curious will know?
Life is Magic.
Life is Magic. It's free to play. All right. So back on track. Last year started off this time. Well, not this time, but, like, you know, the second show we'll be doing tonight, the beginning of the year show. We were talking about Star Wars: The Old Republic. And you and Zav in particular were struggling with your relationship with the game because you both wanted to love it. You especially wanted to love it a lot.
I did, yeah.
You really wanted to love it. You guys both played Jedi Knights. But the problem that you had is, like, the stumbling spot were that you wound up feeling, both of you wound up feeling like it was the same thing you had been doing for 5 years.
Yes.
Like, the same thing you always do in an MMO.
Easy for you to say.
Looking at your quick bar and waiting for abilities and skills to cool down, right? Yep. So, you're on. We've seen Star Wars, The Old Republic struggles. We've seen...
Free-to-play now.
It's gone free-to-play. It's had its ups and downs. Looking back on how you felt about it then, what do you guys think? And James, you played it as well, right?
Yep, a lot.
I
played a ton of an Imperial Agent.
If you could go back now to the beginning of last year, what would you tell yourself about Star Wars?
I wouldn't change too much because I pretty much stopped playing it by about... I mean, I guess it came out about a year ago today, really.
Yeah. It was right before Christmas.
I wouldn't have changed it. I would have played it as much as I did. I really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the universe that they set up. I really enjoyed... I think playing a Jedi Knight, like, from everything I briefly dabbled with a lot of classes from everything I heard, playing a Jedi Knight was not the way to play that game, unfortunately.
A little dry.
But playing an Imperial Agent was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed being able to be... I was off for 3 weeks. I played it for 3 weeks, and as real life started to encroach again, I stopped playing it. And I think that probably says enough. It wasn't something that could encroach on real life in the way that, you know, WoW maybe did at the time. And I don't think WoW can do that anymore either. So I would have played it. I'm glad I experienced what I did. I would have loved to have seen more of the universe. I would have loved to have been able to see, because I think they had some really cool stories and a lot of really cool stuff. But when you have to play 200 plus hours to unlock that full story, it's just really, really difficult to see that story. So maybe at some point I'll go and YouTube everything and kind of understand.
It's free now. You can go play it for free.
I remember last year when it launched, people were upset saying, oh, it's launching so late in the year, it won't be involved in any game of the year discussion for last year.
It doesn't seem to be a problem.
Right? Like, I think everybody's like, oh, probably wouldn't have been last year's, and it's not really on this year's. Like, when announced it was free to play, no one was like, yeah, finally, it's going to come back. People were like, oh, yeah, there's that. It's just interesting how that works out sometimes.
You know, I think they were blessed and cursed by their license.
Do you think it'll be better now in a Disney World? Like, would that game have happened?
I don't think that would have changed much about it. Mm-hmm. I think that the rigidness of the Star Wars mythos is problematic when you're trying to have a game where player choice is paramount and you're trying to give people variety in the characters that they're creating and, you're not running into 27 of the exact same Jedi running around. And that game is, MMOs in general, at least for me, a lot of the motivation has to come from really rad loot.
Definitely.
And when you're getting 12 different beige overcoats that look exactly the same,
there's your issue, Jedi Knight.
It's a bummer. It's a major bummer.
Yeah, the dark side.
Look at how bad the gap's done this year.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bright is beautiful. Isn't that their new thing? Like, we have colors.
Guys, remember?
Hey, look at us.
The dark side was definitely more interesting. Interesting moral choices, interesting.
Do you remember the side conversation you had around this whole topic as well? Because this was also a big topic for the first part of last year. We had this conversation in several episodes about gaming guilt. And one of the points that you brought up around this was that MMOs become those games where you get so absorbed and so engrossed in them that you feel like parts of ordinary life become turned off. Yeah. And then you start to feel this like, oh my God, I'm not behaving like a real citizen of the world.
That is happening right now because I'm back into Terra. And Terra, I'll tell you, in contrast to SWTOR, is, or Sweater, as I like to call it.
Sweater.
The fun is the combat system and the awesome, spectacular graphics in that game. I mean, that game looks better than a lot of single player games, truly. But, The combat system is such a breath of fresh air. It really is an action combat system, and you're not watching your cooldowns, and it's not just pushing auto attack, and it is really fun. And I'm playing it with a controller. It feels like a console action game in a lot of ways. But yes.
But are you feeling that time guilt thing? Because here's the thing. I mean, this is it's easy now when I go back and when I was going back and reading those threads, I sort of get this sense of like, well, wasn't that a lot of gnashing of teeth over nothing? Because...
But no, I think that's a genuine concern that people have, and myself included.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have enough time to play all the games I want to play, much less sink 200 hours into a game. I mean, and
people in your life are important too.
Right. Well, right. And that was the other thing. My wife, like, she knew I was, I was getting sucked in. I was playing like 8 hours a day during that break. It was a full time job playing SWTOR during that holiday break last year, and that was maybe sustainable when I'm not working. Not sustainable when I have a job and there's other games I want to play and I have to like see my wife and do things like that. When I have no job, I can play that quite a bit, but it did not work under any normal circumstance.
Isn't that a good problem though? Like, people always talk about it as like this guilt, we don't get to do everything, but to me that's like walking into Thanksgiving and you're like, I'm not going to be able to eat all of that, but I'm going to eat what I can and I'm going to leave happy.
Sure. I think it's
Christmas,
but I think,
time, dude. Thanksgiving only happened. Terrible reference.
So your analogy is flawed in that it's like saying you just ate like 4 pounds of turkey and ignored everything else on the table because you like turkey and you felt obligated to eat the entire turkey because it was this massive experience that was Star Wars flavored turkey and you really wanted Star Wars flavored turkey.
And your wife's analogy has
gotten ridiculous.
Is in the next room going, why don't you look at me? All you look at is turkey.
Right.
Stop eating turkey for 5 minutes and look at me.
My point is you feel guilt. I mean, like, the guilt is okay, but you feel guilty because you ignored the green bean casserole and you ignored the Halo flavored green bean casserole and the Call of Duty flavored mashed potatoes and you ignored all these other things where you could have had a much more balanced approach to things,
but that's not
and
the,
seen your wife.
It's gotten completely
ridiculous. That's not the game's fault or the environment. I feel like that's a gambler's compulsion or a guy that,
how
works
do you mean
out
a gambler's compulsion?
Well, you feel guilt because you spend
all
your time.
You can play these games for money?
You spend all your time gambling and it's an addiction. If you're getting to that where you play one game for too long, but you wish you were doing something else, like that's a problem that you have.
I just want someone to say Hitman Quinoa or
just
other weird food.
It's a good thing for SWTOR in that aspect, but it's not a sustainable thing. Like, they want a game that's sustainable, and I don't know. And maybe I'm the wrong player then. Like,
I think we live in this world where everybody wants to be the wow, but there is a wow. Or we look back to, when I was little, I played Final Fantasy VII forever, but we're just not that anymore. We don't consume games that way anymore.
Well, we're adults.
That's an interesting point.
That's not true. I disagree vehemently with that, because I will go through these long stretches where I'm like, man, maybe I'm just not Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm just more interested in doing something else right now. There's just, I don't know about these games. I like these games, but, and then there'll be, Diablo 3 will come out, and I will be like, everywhere I am, I'm thinking about it.
But how long did Diablo 3 last? Like 70, 80 hours for you?
No, I put in over 100 hours in that game. But it doesn't matter. The point is, I think what excites me, what gets me charged, what makes me love this hobby so much is when those games come along that are consuming and that make me go, oh my God, I cannot wait till I get home to be able to play that.
But that's
some more.
Not the
Far
guilt
Cry 3
problem.
Is that?
That's not the guilt problem. That's excitement. That's being excited about something and having a passion for it. Did you feel guilty that you weren't
Absolutely.
Doing other things?
You felt
Absolutely.
Guilty with Diablo?
I feel guilty anytime a game is. I love that consuming aspect, but I also feel like I should really be going to the gym right now. I should really be calling my mom. Whatever it is, so, I should eat food and shower.
What point does the guilt show up for you, I guess, though? Like, I mean, if you play, say, a six-hour Call of Duty campaign, or do you feel guilty about playing a six-hour Call of Duty campaign over
in one
two
sitting?
Nights? Two nights,
oh,
maybe.
No, I mean, and listen, I'm in a unique position, too, because it's kind of work.
Right.
You know, and all of us are that way. But I also feel like there's something antisocial sometimes about, you know, being in front of the television to the exclusion of people. And I can just hear myself saying that and going, like, it doesn't really matter. But there's a feeling.
That's the point, exactly. That was the piece that I thought some of the great comments. I feel like last year, I remember we were having this conversation. I remember I was going through these exact same motions last year. And somehow or other, when I was reading, you know, the comments this time, those things that stood out to me were, but it doesn't matter that it's an MMO and it doesn't matter that it's gaming. It's like, these are just the ordinary, normal decisions that people make about what do I like to do and what do I do with my time? It's
sure.
It's not that big a deal. It's no different than me
sure,
deciding.
Yeah, but sure.
One doesn't follow to the other. It is a normal decision of what to do with your time, but it is a big deal. I think it's a big
but
deal.
But it's not. Why is it a big deal?
Because
SWTOR,
you live your life. But SWTOR is designed to be a 250-hour experience for a single character class.
But and so that's, are the Game of Thrones books to read them all.
Exactly.
They're designed to keep you coming back and keep reading. Or a TV show. Or, I don't know. I mean, I understand
but,
it.
Or
working
but,
in
but
your garden. Or whatever
in,
else it might be.
But when you get into the scale, like the scale of that property for the amount of interesting, unique moments that you get, and that's where I think SWTOR fails, in that you have a lot of just go collect three of these, go play this combat that is very similar to WoW's, and while it was very well executed, that isn't interesting enough to keep you there for 250 hours. Those story elements kept me. I played over 200 hours of SWTOR on one character, and those story moments kept me coming back to get through that character and to learn new abilities and to play that character well, but that is a lot of investment. And yeah, there's other things I could do to invest the time, but what other entertainment says I need 250 hours for you to master this one thing? That is a huge, huge commitment.
For me,
and unless it's completely engaging all the way through,
then it's bad design. I feel like that's the guilt I feel is I'll leave a game knowing that there was something awesome somewhere in it that they didn't make worth. They didn't make it interesting enough for me to get to. So, like, Skyward Sword, I never finished. I'm sure I missed some amazing moments, but I got bored and wanted to move on to something else. And so I feel bad, like, these developers, this team, put a lot of work into something awesome that I'll never see because, for whatever reason, I didn't get there.
For me, the compulsion that's unique to an MMO is the keeping up with the Joneses aspect of... Which
that's
is a wonderful thing that Guild Wars 2 addresses directly head-on and is awesome. But there's so much of that... Oh man, my friend leveled two levels. I got to get on and play. Or, hey, four people are on and want to do this thing. I need to get on and do, I have an obligation to do that thing. And that thing lasts 2 hours. So I'm in the middle of a raid right now. I can't do the urgent thing that just came up because I'm committed to a group of people online that are doing this thing. So there's compulsion.
I know you're in the
there.
Hospital. Just don't die for the next 2 hours. I'll be there in 2.5 hours, but we're in a 30-man raid.
Right. There's no
I'm
pause
playing
menu.
A rec basketball game, and my team needs me because I'm five people and we're in the championship game. Right?
Yeah, samesies.
I think these
same-sies.
Are all problems. I'm not trying to discount the problem, but I think that as gamers, we carry this guilt with it that we don't need to.
Right. No, I agree with that. I'm not trying to separate it
but
into its own category that's over and above anything else.
What I will say about this, though, is that it creates an extreme version of what you're talking about, in that your rec basketball game, you have a certain amount of friends in real life that like to play rec basketball, and they probably want to play 1 hour on one night, and they're not going to play every single night for
with
4 hours
internet,
a night.
You can always find
right.
someone.
With the internet, you can always find someone, and there's always people that want to do it, and so you can take that problem that you face, where it's very easy to be like, oh, we're not going to play rec basketball for another week, I'll go do it now, whereas on SWTOR, you could have done that every, or any other MMO, you could do that every single night, all night, and that's the extreme version of the problem,
and
not
you're also,
to drag this out for too long.
You're but, getting into your car, you're going to the rec center. This is sort of staying in your house. I don't know. There's something
couch.
Different to it. But
all right,
anyway.
So I'm going to take us into the break with one of the first holiday stories. We ask everybody to send in holiday stories. We got some great submissions. The first one is from Silent Dante. Now, this is a bit of a downer at first, but it has a really interesting resolution. So this is from Silent Dante, who says, okay, I was around 7 or 8, and I was a very curious / obnoxious child. You know, the curious, obnoxious type, Jeff. My mother had divorced my father when I was 5, and we lived in Maryland in the basement of a townhouse owned by my grandma. I remember cutting a very small hole in one of my wrapped gifts under the tree, maybe 2 or 3 days before Christmas, in order to figure out what I might be getting. I had glimpsed the box of an Atari game, which must have meant I was getting an Atari and some games. Oh boy, was I excited. Well, my mother figured out what I'd been up to. You know, it was hard to sneak around when living in a basement, when, you know, there's no real walls between the living room and the bedrooms, and she'd heard me rustling with the presents and had found my secret hole. And now
you know when your mom finds your secret hole.
And now you may find what happens next is bad parenting or horrible or even an overreaction, but this is what happened. When Christmas came, I had opened all my presents, and the Atari or games were nowhere to be found. It turns out, as punishment for snooping, she had taken them back and planned on returning them. So I was devastated and pretty shook up, because I thought I'd never be possible to not get those gifts I had snooped on, but sure enough, that's what happened. Now, this served to almost kill my interest and passion for games, but in the end, spurred me on to look more into video games, what they were about, and what they could be. My Grammy eventually did give me an Atari. Yay, Grammy. Just let's bonus for Grammy right there. The year the Nintendo came out, and I devoured many a game on the Atari, and then going over to my childhood friend's homes to devour everything that Nintendo that he got, and from there on, I loved games and anything people could imagine, including books, TVs, and films. I feel like the actual true first love was games, and that brought me to all other forms of entertainment I still love today. That's pretty nice.
Yay.
Pretty cool story. Weird story of love for passion for video games out of adversity.
I think it's funny that a parent would go, yeah, you know what your present is early? Well, you're not getting it. Screw you.
Well,
I think it's kind of
tough love. Tough love. I don't know. All right. So we will be back. I'm going to get this thing back on the holiday tip. We have lots more about 2012 to talk about. So don't go anywhere. We will be back when the Weekend Confirmed holiday special continues. Ain't nothing like a ill reindeer.
Hey, man, if it doesn't work out, I know a couple of mama bears we can hook up with.
Ho!
Oh, dude, I love Die Hard.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So we're going to get this thing back on track now, because we got a whole shit ton of stuff to talk about in 2012. So one of the most amazing things about 2012 at the beginning of the year last year was, looking back at this thing, was it was a big RPG start to the year. Of course, we just talked about Star Wars The Old Republic. We know how that's gone. I think that in the upcoming show you'll get next week, we'll probably be talking a lot about the future of MMOs and free-to-play and all that kind of stuff. I didn't want to get sidetracked in that, which is why we sort of cut away from that, or because we could do that in the next show. But look at all this other stuff that came out. After that, you had Kingdoms of Amalur, which came out, which we all loved. We had Ken Ralston on for that show that people like freaked out on, because he was all over the board.
Dude,
and
he's a character. He's great.
He was a total character, and a lot of people didn't appreciate his... it was definitely tongue-in-cheek. It was definitely sense of humor of him like proclaiming himself to be like the grand poobah of game design.
That is true. Yes, he wasn't the most modest gentleman.
No, he was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
I should mention we did a Chinese fire drill here in the studio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's Andrea Renee. I'm sorry, I have to reintroduce people. I'm sorry, I'm already not thinking about things. So, Andy Jeff Mattis has taken the place. So, the Jeffs have swapped. I have a new Jeff.
Yes, I'm not Kanata. I am Andy Jeff Mattis.
We now have Jeff Mattis instead of Jeff Kanata. Andrew Yoon stayed because we didn't let really Andrew have an edge word edgewise during the first segment.
As an Android phone player and Android phone owner, I don't play iOS games and... what else did you guys talk about? I was too busy like zoning out.
However, he drew a picture of a sunflower and a bee.
I tried to step in. I tried.
And
you all looked so bored. I was like, hey, move on. Move on, guys.
That is a cheerful motherfucking doodle though, dude.
And that is true. And the man who was single-handedly trying to keep Pharrell above the poverty line.
Oh. All day, every day.
buying, you know, like whatever kind of brand of clothes he can get his hands on. That is Mr. J's ball right over there.
Yo.
I know that's a pretty pimp watch you got, though.
This is like a Sony Android watch. I'm just like a company man all
the time. Wait, a Sony Android watch?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's that all about?
It's like Bluetooth enabled, so there's like apps that live on the phone, and it'll just send data to my watch. So, oh snap, I got a Google Talk notification. Hey,
but you're not playing
phone.
Game Dev Story on that thing, are you?
No, no. Most likely just calculator.
Playing Angry Birds.
Yeah,
not the future. Okay, we are not derailing this segment with mobile games of any sort. I wanted to get first of all, like Kingdoms of Amalur was one of the big surprises to me of last year. It was a super fun game. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I loved that game. I was really disappointed that more people didn't love that game.
Well, actually, a lot of people did love it.
Well, I do understand people's criticism of the game, about it saying, you know, oh, this looks like WoW, the RPG. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, sure, you can make that argument, I guess. But I was addicted to it. I really enjoyed the combat. I really had a lot of fun. I will say I didn't get too deep into the actual lore of the game because I thought it was just a little too complicated.
So it's too dense.
Yes. I just kind of like ignored most of the text.
At the risk of sounding crass, I think that game would have done a lot better than it did if it had a different title.
Well, it had a different title. I mean, that's the funny thing about that game is that game was dead and buried.
Buried.
It was buried. It was buried in the hole. That game was dead and buried as a big, huge game until 38 Studios came along and wanted to have something to have out prior to what was the name? What was the name of the
MMO?
The MMO going to be?
Oh God.
I don't remember either.
Yeah.
Quick, somebody Google it.
Which had completely fallen apart since then, obviously. Yeah. Studio imploded. They wanted to have something out ahead of time, so they financed that. They did a deal with EA. They got EA in bed on Amalur. And everything worked out great, and that game did really successful.
Everything worked out great for that game.
And then it turned around and collapsed back in on them again.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of complicated things, not just the title. I mean, the names of the characters, the names of the locations. Some of the plot lines were just super complicated to understand because it was like this whole new world, and there was all these strange words.
For all the people who are immediately going to diss Andrea for like, oh, it's too complicated, all that. What about Skyrim? All sorts of new names there.
But Skyrim wasn't the first entry. I mean, the Elder Scrolls has a long stable of lore behind it.
I agree. I think Andrea has a point, though. I think with a name like Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning, it makes it sound like it's part of this.
Like you're supposed to already know it.
Yeah, people don't.
So what about the Elder Scrolls Arena?
Well,
that was the first Elder Scrolls. I mean, the Elder Scrolls Arena.
And it took a long time for the franchise to get to where it is today.
It did.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not trying to say that because it was deep and dense that it was bad, because I'm a fan of it. And I'm a huge fantasy person. Like, I read a lot of fantasy and I play a lot of fantasy games. So for me, I loved it. But from the people I talked to that didn't like it, that was one of the biggest criticisms that I heard.
Well, I think it's because they were developing that MMO in conjunction with that. So they sort of erred too much on the side of, okay, let's set up this world and all this fiction, instead of going, okay, look, we can take a more sort of gradual approach to introducing the player and not hit them over the head with all these.
Well, keep in mind, most of the lore piece of Amalur was shoehorned on top of the game Big Huge had been building for 2.5 years.
Well, and I think the game would have been better for it had it dialed that back a little bit, especially being the first entry in a series. The game was very, very accessible, but the lore was sort of impenetrable from you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the gameplay itself, just the mechanics, I thought were really fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. I know some people had some criticisms over the menu systems and things like that, but I mean, that didn't bother me. I think once you got the hang of it, I really jumped right in and really liked it. And I love that you could, like, respec your skills at any point, and you could change the face of your character at any point, which a lot of RPGs don't let you do. I mean, I really enjoyed the game.
I thought the game had a tremendous amount going for it. And actually, going back through the notes here and pulling it up reminded me that Amalur was a game that I've already got 20 hours in, and I'd like to put the other 40 hours in to finish, because it was really fun. And I would argue that the depth of the lore was great in what really, on the face of it, was an action RPG. Because yeah, the combat system is totally action-oriented in there. It's very, you know, thinking back on it now, like, you know, very removed from it, it's like a little bit more sophisticated Fable. It's a Fable with a little bit more to do, so mm-hmm. it's not quite just so tap A at the right time. Yeah, you have more spells to play with.
You
have
the combos you can put together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really, really enjoyed that. I mean, there was another game that, and some people are going to laugh, because the game itself had a tremendous number of flaws, but the combat was fun. There was this game for the Xbox called Sudeki, which was done by some folks in England who really wanted to make a Japanese role-playing game, and it was sort of a train wreck for a number of reasons, but the combat in it was very fun. And I think that Amalur actually fulfills a lot of what that vision would be because of the fact that it did have good lore behind it, and it did have a, like once you got, there was a reason to have to keep playing for 40 or 50 hours. I mean, right, at some point in time, the action RPG needs to give you some more than just, like, running and slashing.
Well, and on this, by the same token, if you are a person who is, like, allergic to lore, you don't really have to pay too much attention to that stuff to really enjoy the game.
You can rock and roll through MMO all day long.
Exactly. It
spoon feeds you the quests. It gives you, like, little quest markers. It's like, learn from MMOs how that stuff works. You can just rock and roll through that shit.
Yeah, it's really streamlined design. Maybe,
but how many of you weren't able to finish the game because you were still playing Skyrim?
No, you know what? That wasn't a problem for me, and I don't know if that was because I put, like, 100 hours in Skyrim, like, in 2011, but and the DLC for Skyrim didn't come out until this summer, which was a couple months after Amalur had already been out. My thing with Amalur is I haven't even finished the end game yet, and I'm a solid 45 hours in or more because mm-hmm. I got so obsessed with doing all of the side quests. There's so many side quests in that game, almost to a fault, that you get so distracted. But it also is a tribute to how expansive the different areas of each of the map is. And one of my friends was like, I can't believe you think that. They all look so generic. And I was like, I don't know. I disagree.
Well, Skyrim for me falls into the now ever-growing list of Bethesda games that I've not finished.
Wait, you haven't done the end game in Skyrim yet?
Come on. I have not finished a Bethesda. I have not finished a Todd Howard game.
Don't worry, they don't finish their games either.
Oh!
At least not until the second or third patch. But seriously, it's like, as much as I enjoy, you know, the closest I think I've gotten was Fallout 3. And about two-thirds of the way into Fallout 3, I realized that I had not played through the order of progression the way the designers had expected to, which is cool. It's very cool that you can get off track and do things in that manner. But by virtue of having done it that way, I wound up in places that I was supposed to have already been, and it was, like, really slow and not so cool, and I had already been out to the carrier, and then I was, like, going back to the radio station, and I was supposed to have already been to the radio station the way that, I guess, theoretically, they put it together.
So were you were pretty close to the end game in that?
I guess.
I mean, I didn't finish it either. I have the same problem where you get into the world, and you're like, you know, I look at Skyrim, and I go, you know, I've played that game more hours than most other games that I played this year, and I still haven't finished it.
Yep.
And I may never finish it. And that's okay with me because of the nature of the game. Like, mm-hmm. like I've had a lot of great experiences in that.
And I have to say, like, the funny thing is now, going back to just a few weeks ago, I was irritated as hell because, look, I finally pushed my way through to the end of Lost Odyssey. But here's the thing, is with life with Lost Odyssey, by virtue of being so very linear, it was not hard to know what was next.
Right.
It was very easy to, like, stay on point and be like, okay, here's the next place I go, here's the next place I go, I need to grind up, I need to get more. And I'm not saying that that's good. As a matter of fact, I think we've talked at length about why I didn't really enjoy that so much, but there's got to be, like, it seems like we could still be developing better middle ground
It's like
for,
the fun,
RPGs.
The funnel of, you know, the main storyline versus that open world. That all
Yakuza hits it perfectly for me. Like, Yakuza hits it perfectly for me in that I can go and do those other things as much as I want to, but I always know what I need to be doing next. And there's, like, just enough sense of I should be going to do this at the right time that I can, like I'll go to the hostess bar for a little while and be like, yeah, you know, I really probably should be fucking off in this post this bar anymore. I should go on and, like, get after the gangsters.
Whereas Skyrim is the exact opposite. Like, I spent, like, probably 20 hours the first time I played it just trying to accrue enough money to buy a house. like, I mean, that
really
was...
Really, though.
That
so,
was,
like, for me, when I played Skyrim, like, doing the side quests were never real... There's no motivation to do them. Like,
awesome
my motivation
weapons.
Is to, yeah, but see, like, my motivation is to complete the game, like, finish out the story. So I will do anything and everything I can do to go down that path and figure out, like, all right, what is the quest that are available? Which one is actually, like, well, all right, here's my story quest. Let's complete that. I mean, I think I actually like the design of, like, Yakuza 4 or something like that, where it makes it really simple to know exactly where you need to move. I mean, I think right now I'm probably going to run into that problem when I play with Far Cry, because I will, it's like so open, I'll be like, oh, shit, I gotta go do kill some more
you're
boars.
Right. Actually,
like,
Far Cry does
do
Far Cry 3 does sort of slide into that same thing, much along the lines, and I saw this comparison somewhere, and it makes a lot of sense, to Red Dead. Oh, it says the same sort of, like, wide open thing, except that the thing about Red Dead was the side quests were few. There were just a lot of side, like, entertainment. So there was, like, a lot of midway carnival shit that happens on the side of the road, and you could get distracted by it if you wanted to, but you still kind of knew what you're supposed to be doing. There are fewer numbers of side quests that are quests proper.
Yeah, the deepest stuff on the side quest side was, you know, the stuff that was more along the lines of hunting, where you're or going through these checklists. The treasure hunting stuff was all very good, but it wasn't, like, you know, a side mission with a different exclamation point on your mini map. It was just sort of stuff that you did.
Now, do you remember what the next one after Amalur was?
RPG?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mass Effect?
13-2. The forgotten Final Fantasy 13, which fixed so much, because people actually who played 13-2 quite enjoyed it. 13-2 went back, changed a lot of the way the game played, has this entire time warp, or, you know, time travel element to it, so it allows you to warp around the world, much the way, you know, 10-2 did as well, so you have, like, this more flexibility on how to approach things.
Did they cut the tutorial in half so it was only 6 hours instead of 12?
Were you able to change costumes? That's really... Look, that was the big thing for me in 10-2.
You do know that, that's my favorite, one of my favorite combat systems in Final Fantasy ever, right?
No. Did you know that? Explain.
The dress change system? The dress change system is amazing. It's like the most awesome iteration of the job system.
I just wish our listeners could see how your eyes just lit up right there.
It was so good.
It actually looked like anime eyes. Like, it looked like there were actual twinkles in there.
It was so much fun because you could fill in each of your dress spheres. And
Final Fantasy XX, Project Runway.
But I loved it because you filled in your dress spheres. You were able to have this flexibility, move between jobs the way you wanted to, but still feel like you were actually materially contributing to the progression within the dress spheres, and you had the ultimate dresses. It was awesome. It was so fucking well put together. It was such a fun system to play in. Such a fun system to play in.
And then Peter Gunn would, like, totally compliment you.
What?
Sorry.
Jason and Andrea are down there laughing at me because I get animated about it. But I really
weren't laughing at you, actually.
I think it's amazing. Like, I'm happy that it's working out. Right?
Hey, you know what? Everyone has to have a passion.
Yeah, and so 13.
And yours is dressing up in Final Fantasy.
I could be talked into doing that.
He's covering his laugh. I was like,
"It's actually not a bad." It's actually not a bad system when you get past the ridiculousness.
I could be a sky pirate
changing clothes.
I think 13-2 is one of those games where the gameplay system is terrific, but
got a lot better.
But it's just hampered by a world I'm not interested
in.
So
how close was it to 10-2? Like in terms of what they did from 10 to 10-2 and...
So the interesting thing about 13-2, because Ariel played all the way through 13-2, and she quite enjoyed it. Up until the ending. So
because
one of the things that was interesting about 13-2 is that it ends on a cliffhanger. So you've invested 40 plus hours in 13-2 and it ended on a cliffhanger.
Does the devil wear Prada? We don't know.
Leaving the door open for what we thought was going to be DLC, but now we know that it's going to be, you know, this lightning, this new 13 lightning story.
Returns, yeah.
And that's really, like, I applaud them for wanting to tell such a grand story arc, but it becomes increasingly challenging to, like, keep people and players engaged across the entirety of that spectrum, which is something Mass Effect learned, right? Because then Mass Effect 3 was the next game that came out during the beginning of 2012. And looking back on it, it's all really easy now as, like, you know, hindsight being 2020 to say, yeah, you know, there's probably no way they were going to make everybody happy with that, huh?
No, you can't ever make anybody happy with anything, especially when you're talking about finalizing a trilogy with a character who was really loved by that community.
But a character that you had created. And that was the thing, was there was that at some point in time, if you're drawing this arc, when you're in the middle of the arc, it's really easy for the designer to play with things and leave a lot of flexibility for how you as the player do whatever it is you're going to do with your character.
I think one of the biggest flaws of that series is as from 1 to 3, as the series progressed, it became less and less obvious, or I mean became less and less or became more obvious, rather, that your decisions weren't.
You're
really
starting to get funneled.
Yeah. You're like, OK, I know.
And you had to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's that push-pull between how much – it's like, Jeff, okay, I want to give you the reins, but at the same time, I don't really want to let you steer too far because at the end, I want you to get here.
Yeah, and we're going to create a finite amount of content. Right?
I mean, like, the thing is Mass Effect 1 was equally limiting, but once again, I think the more important aspect of video game storytelling isn't actually giving players choice. It's giving them the illusion of choice, you know?
Right.
Well, I mean, and it's all about how you feel about those choices in the moment. I don't think when you make choices in your day-to-day life, you think about what the consequences are, like, years down the line, right? Like, you make a choice in the moment, and then you live with that choice, and sometimes you go back and go, maybe I should have made a different choice. And I think that people maybe overreacted to the idea that, oh, well, I made this choice to keep the Rachni Queen, and then it didn't end up meaning anything in the end,
it's
you know?
It's funny that you bring that up, because that was the exact moment where in Mass Effect 3 where I was like, okay, this isn't really going
to
be that.
I mean, I think to the detriment of Mass Effect 3, it's because they made all of the choices that you made across all three games end up in a numerical, like, literally a numerical score. Like, oh, you know, Jacob is still alive, plus 25. And you played multiplayer, plus 7%, you know?
So, Jeff, you remember when we were talking about this mm-hmm. last week, it all had to reduce down to a game system,
right?
Which we were doing a comparison to The Walking Dead, which yeah. I want to catch up with here in a second. Tell me about the Rachni Queen piece, though, you were saying. That was a big moment for you?
Well, it was the moment where I realized that the culmination of my choices would not be... Like, I could play through the game and make the opposite choice, and I would still experience basically the same thing.
Well, do you think that's mainly... I mean, yes, you know that they're going in... So, after seeing 3, right, you've seen this trilogy completed, you know, hey, they went from, here's the beginning, and we want to tell this end story. This is what we want you to know, right, or experience with this game. But do you think you felt these I don't know, feelings that you had with 3 and, like, you know, like, shit, I didn't have to do anything, really. I could have just played the game however I wanted to. I could have been, you know, the savior or an asshole, and it still have the same outcome. Do you think that bothered you only because during 1, you weren't really given that, like, idea that, like, oh, crap, like, this will matter in the long run? Like, it wasn't really told to you in a way of, like, instructions
no,
like that?
No, I mean, BioWare was selling me the series with the, hey, your decisions actually matter in this game.
And I think specifically with the Rachni Queen, I think because she doesn't appear in the second game, you're like, oh my god, they're really gonna build this up, you know?
Right.
Like, I think we sort of self-hyped, but actually, I had the luxury of playing Mass Effect 3 on Wii U, so that I don't have my save file transferred over.
I like how you call that a luxury.
I know, it was interesting.
A perspective, okay? Like, in having a new perspective, because. As much as people criticize Mass Effect 3 for sort of not acknowledging some of the bigger decisions, I missed a lot of the stuff that I wish would carry over from my 360 save file. Like, the smaller stuff, like, you know, that stalker fan that you would have in Mass Effect 1
right,
and 2.
Right.
Like, because...
Don't they give you the opportunity to make those decisions?
No, the like, granular decisions.
The comic book
thing?
The
comic book thing is a little limiting.
The comic book... covers it in really broad strokes.
Oh, okay.
So, like, none of the, like, really granular stuff gets covered. So, and for me, like, losing that actually sort of made me realize, oh, you know, like, yeah, maybe the big picture is the same for everyone.
Well,
but, like, what makes that game, like, yours, you know, what makes you feel ownership of it are those small stories that you get to partake in, which are completely omitted when you start completely afresh.
And,
you know?
And really, it doesn't start to fall apart for me until you step back and look at the whole picture and go and realize what your alternate decisions would have done, right? So the Rex thing, like having saving Rex in the first game and having him reappear in three, well, two, he does too, but like in three, pretty hardcore as like another character. And to realize that if you don't save him, it's just another Krogan that sounds kind of like him and is not, I mean, you just don't have that personal connection with him, but it really doesn't change anything at all.
But you know, the flip side of this, and I think that one of the things I like about the distance of being able to look back on things is you start to be able to put things into better perspective, is that I've sort of been down on Mass Effect 3, and looking back on it, I realize, you know, actually, the experience of playing Mass Effect 3 for me was really impressive.
Oh,
like,
it's,
I really actually enjoyed it. Like, the improvements they made to the action combat, which is a, which is the, like, they decided to go down the action combat road. And in 2, it still wasn't quite there. But in 3, they had it perfected.
I played Mass Effect 1 like a few weeks ago, and I can't. I literally can't anymore. You know,
yeah.
I really want EA to make a port of Mass Effect 1 with the gameplay of 3 or 2, you know?
Have you played the PS3 port?
Yeah, yeah. That's the one you were playing? Yeah.
And then to think that, you know, like, in Mass Effect 3, while yes, where I was going increasingly became a narrow funnel that I had to get to the end of the game,
right,
it was still my Shepard. It was still my Shepard, and I was still projecting through her badass bitch in space, sort of like, I'm in control, like, very powerful woman character. Like, that was really cool. It still was that character to the end, and though I didn't like some of the progression steps, and I especially thought that the march to the end was a little, you know, ham-fisted, it still was my experience,
right?
And it still got to be tailored by what I wanted, while at the same time shaped by the game designer.
Right.
And that's a really cool combination.
Mm-hmm. And when you compare that to, say, Walking Dead in terms of choice, right? The Walking Dead has the same problems that Mass Effect 3 does.
Well, but maybe other problems,
but it disguises those things a lot better. And the reason the Mass Effect doesn't do a great job is because when you look at that dialogue tree, you know, okay, left and right are informational. You know, up to the left is Paragon, down to the right is, you know.
So who around the table has played Walking Dead?
I have.
So everybody's played Walking
Dead. Yeah.
So,
well, I haven't finished it, though.
Wait, how far are you in?
I finished episode 2.
So then let me challenge you with this. One of the really good comment challenge threads that came up in the last show thread was this, that The Walking Dead, which we have been a little bit high on, in just not only in this show, but in a number of members of the video game media over the last few weeks, has ignored one thing, which is that games, especially as evidenced by Mass Effect 3, involve all of these other things.
Right.
There's all these RPG systems and combat systems and all these ways you're interacting with the game, where the interaction with the game in The Walking Dead is rather simplified. And it does, to a great degree, come down to an interactive video novella sort of approach.
Oh, yeah.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I totally agree that Walking Dead is like an interactive story. Like, that's what you're an over-glorified story.
Yeah. And that's why I don't believe that it deserves to be called Game of the Year. It is a fantastic game, but when it comes down to it, you mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, it's the most simplified version of something that's already been done before.
But,
and then on top of that, your conversation choices, and maybe this is just like a little like annoyance of mine. Like, I hated that I had a timer on my conversation, because there was some really
I love the fact that silence is a valid option, but I think one of the reasons why, you know, gamers and, you know, press have taken so kindly to the game is that there is no min-maxing. When Mass Effect 3 came out,
in the
Shaq threads, like, within hours, people were trying to figure out, okay, so what is the most efficient way to get the best stats and the best possible outcome out of this game? Because you knew how the game system worked. By stripping the system, stripping the mechanics out of it, there, you know, if do you drop the brick, yes or no? Like, neither one really is a better option than the other, and that's why it becomes that much more impactful.
Go ahead, Jason.
I mean, I think that, well, first, I think that I do consider Walking Dead a game, because I guess, like, I have just a wide viewpoint of what a game is, right?
Yeah.
Like, they still, I mean, it's still required.
I do too, just for the record. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm just saying, like,
we should have nominated it for Game of the Year. I just don't think it is the game of the year.
I mean, I have my reasons why I think it's Game of the Year, but that's more emotional than it is gameplay wise.
But talking about your pause thing, first of all, I totally cheated the game playing on PS3 because you could just hit the PS button and it'll like bring up the menu and like pause everything.
Oh,
you
cheated the game. No way.
Dude. All right, so first of all, I like went through episode one long time ago when it came out, and I was like, all right, cool, I will take the pressure of this. But by the time I finished that, I was like, all right, I'm just going to wait for all five to come out, play them in one fell swoop, right? And I got like in a kind of heated battle with the Area 5 guys about like how I went about playing the game. I mean, personally, I wouldn't, like, with those type of decisions that that game requires you to make, and knowing that they will, you know, go over each episode, like, okay, this person's dead or this person's not dead or whatever, you know, that's not a rash decision. Like, you wouldn't make that type of, like, on guard, like, decision in
but
real
that's
life.
The thing. Oh, yeah, you would, because yeah, you,
nah,
in
I don't
the
know.
World,
no,
I, there's
I don't
one
think
decision.
So.
There's one decision.
I think that's the
I'll
thing about Walking
like,
Dead is Walking
Lily,
Dead wants
right?
to thrust
like,
you into that situation where, Jason, you got to decide right now. Andrew or Andrea, which one of these motherfuckers dies?
Like, that's something that you're going to... I mean, if you had to make this decision, you're going to think about it. You're not... There's only one
you're
person.
Not going
to
think about it. You don't have any time. You think about
no,
it, both of them die.
There's only a couple
which
situations in the game
that, right?
where time matters. Well, when you're talking about leaving somebody on the side of the road, like you would have a little bit of time to think about that.
Not a lot.
If you strip out the time-based stuff in some of the... Because it's not every dialogue choice that
true,
you make.
True,
right? It's just specific ones. Mm. And I think that adds something to the game when you can press a dialogue choice and be like, oh shit! That wasn't exactly what I wanted to say, and then it's moving.
Yeah, but
on.
But see, in real life, you would think about it, like, oh, you would start something and be like, you know what? No, then I'm gonna rephrase the statement because
exactly.
I know I'm not
you would be
with
able
it.
To
like,
have a take back
exactly
seas.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, like, there's only one case in the game where either I wish I had another option, and that's Lily. Right when you come to the climax of Lily. I won't ruin anything.
Alert.
But when you come to climax of Lily, I just like there is another option I would want it to have available to me. Otherwise, like I'm pretty happy with all the decisions I made, and I could have seen myself making decisions I wouldn't want to make only because I like feel like this time pressure thing, which is it's an added mechanic, but one that I don't necessarily.
I think it also not overtly but subtextually adds to the tension of the game.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
Like, I mean, look. We're always asking what other mechanics can there be than pulling the left trigger to aim down iron sights and pulling a trigger to shoot somebody. Well, that time clock is another mechanic. That time clock is a mechanic that the game designer specifically put in there to put you under a decision-making situation. Mm-hmm. It's not the decision of whether or not I put the cursor over someone's head and pull the trigger. It's the decision of, well, what do I do?
Well, and those decisions are intentionally... Like, I was reading an interview with the developers of the game, the writer of the game, and they're basically saying they knew they had a great decision when they went into a room, a meeting room, and basically said, okay, here are the choices. And somebody's like, oh, well, this is obviously what you'd do. And somebody's like, no, this is obviously
exactly
what you would do. And then they get into these heated arguments about it, and that's how they knew they had a great decision.
I just think, I mean, for if you take that mechanic, right, and maybe put it into a world where I have to believe I'm in this world, like a fantasy game or something like that, right? Like, I can be more willing to live with it. But when you're giving me a mechanic that, like, yeah, zombies aren't going to come around the corner anytime soon, but it's way more personal, I guess, and, like, with all the other type of media out with Walking Dead, you have the show, you have the comic book, right? You have, like, feelings of, like, okay, I've developed these opinions about these characters, I've developed these relationships with these characters. All right, how do I really want to go about this? Like, you know, I have this affinity to Rick. How do I want, like, do I want to portray Rick as Rick in the comic book as a writer, or how I would portray my decisions with Rick?
And I would argue that as a player, that's very much stuff that I'm thinking about as well. But when it comes down to the actual in-the-moment decision, I want to be like, oh, yeah, he's talking to me. What am I going to say? This one. It is like real life, where it's like you could say something to this person that would be a legitimate response, that maybe this person isn't the right person to say that to, you know, like, so you're,
I mean, I know if I went through the game playing like that, like complete with a time base and had complete reign, like decisions I can do now in real life, right? I would have killed everyone. Everyone would have been dead. You're all dicks and assholes. Like, fuck you all.
So now we all know Jason, by the way, a cold hearted son of a bitch.
Yeah. In the event of a zombie apocalypse,
stay clear, Jason. All right. We're going to wrap up this segment with another one of your stories. This one's from AJ Guy. It says, after sharing my PS2 holiday stories last year, I figured I'd regale everyone with another Christmas story. This one goes all the way back to third grade in the Christmas of 1992. As with most kids, I really wanted a copy of Mortal Kombat for Christmas, but my parents, they wouldn't hear of it. Do you really want to copy? Do you really want to see some guys' heads roll around on the ground?
Yes.
My dad asked. Yes, I replied.
Hey, Dad, get over here.
Imagine my surprise come Christmas morning when I opened a shiny new copy of Mortal Kombat for my Sega Genesis. Thumbs up for the Genesis. Mm-hmm. My mother was quite surprised as well. Needless to say.
Got him this?
Dad's like, I actually just want this for myself.
Dad did not get Christmas all through the month of January. He knows the difference between a game and reality, my dad reassured her. And no, I don't know how he found out about this in an age before the internet. It wasn't long before everyone started telling me to punch in ABACABB. The infamous blood code. Yeah, I never told my dad about that one.
Good move, kid.
Great story. Thanks very much. Stick around. We have a whole half of the holiday weekend confirmed yet to come. Yes, I do have house music versions of Christmas carols.
Winter awesome. Wonderland House.
Was that right? Yeah. Skrillex's Fireside Christmas?
Yeah. No, did you hear the...
That's when it starts snowing on the drop. It's like,
drop
wait for
the bass. Ho, ho, whoa, whoa.
Just for the record, Christian Spicer, who's joined me here on the left, was actually like make-believe rubbing his gums there. Like,
well, you know. I was the only one looking into the booth at the glow stick dance rally that was going on, so I was giving them some coked out gum rubbing. And
glow stick dance rally! Well, Jason is sticking in with us on this segment. Say hi, Jason.
Hello.
And
good
Mike
evening.
Schramm, big it's friend me. Of the show from the official, unofficial Apple weblog, MikeSchramm.com. His stand-up stuff that he... Well, not stand-up. What do you, you do?
Improv.
Like, improv.
But joystick.com, too.
And joystick.com.
That's what people care about. And I just want to mention this real quick. Incredible Podcast is the other podcast that I do. And on Monday, me and my co-host on that podcast are going to be live streaming for charity for Oxfam. So go to IncrediblePodcast.com. So if you're around on Monday, Christmas Eve, we're going to be live streaming games all day
what
long.
What time of day?
We're starting at like 10 a.m. Pacific, and it's till question mark. So look Whoa. Out, world.
And for charity?
Whoa. It's for charity. It's for Oxfam. There's a group of guys in Europe called Yogscast. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're great guys. They've been streaming for like 3 weeks now, and they've earned like 100,000 pounds. That's how they measure. I don't know pounds of what. But that's how they measure
gold, lard. Yeah, I don't
something
know
something like that.
I thought they measured things in stones.
I don't understand it either. But apparently,
those crazy Brits.
I thought it was in puns.
Heyo. So they the look on your face after you made that joke, like you just threw that joke out.
Like, no, my joke was me throwing you guys under the bus for your shitty pun joke.
Okay. Like, I don't know.
You're disgusting.
Dude, no, actually, yeah, you were sad. You were sad about. You said yeah. that you were like, I wish I had.
Yeah. You knew
no,
that no,
dead was, joke was dead when it was flying into the.
It's like
that
when you
was
did,
the point.
Do you remember yeah. the live show when you did the cell phone joke?
That was a great joke.
That was that joke did not work at all.
It worked really well. Then apparently Seinfeld told one similar. Like 50 years before that, so I don't tell it anymore.
But my point is, Yogscast, they're great guys, and they
you know
are streaming
I hate about cell phones.
For he's right. here.
Oh, it's just John. No, it's just me.
We're streaming on Monday, so if you're listening to this before Christmas Eve, tune in on Monday and check us out. It'll be a lot of fun. We're playing games all day, League of Legends and Halo.
Oh, you're gonna
and
play yes. some League of Legends.
We're gonna play all kinds of good stuff on the stream. Cool. So tune in.
IncrediblePodcast.com.
IncrediblePodcast.com. Thank you.
So it was funny, the like Chinese fire drill that we did between sets here. I was like, I want to talk about handhelds a little bit, and we were like, no, I don't talk about handhelds.
People in the studio back there are min maxing the lineups for each segment of the
they
show.
Are.
They are sitting back there going, we should have this guy in. No, we should switch this guy in.
Dude, I got a 19 decks. I should definitely be on the ranged segment here. I don't know about
that
this.
Area of effect attack.
I got the AoE attack.
We're trying to line up exactly the right layout for everybody.
That's
show.
How much we care for the fans.
The
That's
funny thing
on.
Is that, like, as a group, I would bet that a number of us play a lot of games on handheld devices, whether there be iOS or Nintendo DS of any flavor or PlayStation portables, and yet we get a tremendous amount of shit because handheld devices have really felt like entrenched. People get defensive about it. It's like defending your territory, defending your platform. But looking back on it, like at the beginning of last year, Vita had not come out yet. It was out in Japan. 3DS had been out, but both the platforms were suffering a big lull in sales. Now, obviously, you know, one of them, 3DS, righted the ship very, very, very strong. But it's really interesting to read some of the comments going back there. Like, for instance, VideoStar, who comments a lot on the forum, says, the Vita is not at all in dire straits, because we were talking about the Vita being in trouble even before it came out in America. So the industry has just not at all learned the lessons they should from recent history. I think the Vita will be fine.
I agree with that statement, but I agree that we still haven't, they still haven't learned the lesson.
Yeah. I think the Vita is fine, but nobody's buying it.
Well, that how can it, well, how do you think it can be both? Yeah. That's
I think it's a great device. I think it's awesome, but I also think that it's in trouble.
They're marketing it, their new ads, well, their current ads, they say console experience on the go or in your hand or whatever that is. And that's putting them in such, it's not a PS3. It's not an Xbox 360. It's close. Well, it's super powerful.
And by the way, do you really want to be jumping around a rooftop acting like you're playing Call of Duty? That's the most ridiculous ads ever.
Yes, I do.
By the way, Sony right now seems to have completely, like, this is not our concern because we're not an advertising podcast, but they really seem to have lost the point on how to make good ads. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Ariel, as you guys know, works on PlayStation All-Stars, and I'm watching their ads for that game, and I'm like, if I wasn't a core gamer, I'm just watching some dudes like who are characters that I may or may not know. There's no like, hey, go buy the game. And same thing, where's the advertising for Vita? Where's the thing that says, hey, go buy it? You should play a Vita because Vita's cool, and show me playing a Vita and people playing Vitas. Like, as much as I'm not a fan of the Wii U Cube commercials, it at least shows people playing Wii U's and having fun with them.
So are you comparing the Vita commercials with...
What Vita commercial have you seen?
Are you comparing the PlayStation commercials with, you know, like the Surface commercials where like, hey, whoop-de-doo, you could click, but I don't actually see anything to do with the Surface.
What do you mean?
So I've heard a lot of like the Microsoft Surface commercials. They come out.
Oh, Surface.
Yeah. So are you comparing this? Like they're saying like, you're showing me a fancy ad, but I'm not actually seeing anything to actually make me want to go buy this.
I wouldn't say the Surface ads are great, but I would say this. At least they show the device a lot. And they show people tapping stuff on the device. That the ads like for PlayStation All-Stars never even shows the game. You do not see the fucking game.
You do see the Nathan Drake live character.
You can look at Apple too. Apple does nothing but the device. Like they have a hand showing coming into the screen. I'm a Sony fan, and speaking as a Sony fan, I think their number one mistake was when they turned against Kevin Butler. That is the problem.
Oh, because remember those
I'm going to call that out right now.
I agree. And those ads always showed the game. They showed people playing games. They were a great
game. And they were great. People love the ads. There are thousands of views on YouTube. Yeah.
Let's face it, right? Video games in general, advertising has been like, it's pretty obvious most of the time that the people making the ads are not the game enthusiasts.
That's true.
Right. And that's
well more evident.
They don't even know anything about the games.
Right. Well, no, that's what I mean. And it's more evident than in most industries because, you know, video games do take a little bit of extra, like sort of know. You know, like you have to be in the know a little bit to be able to comment, you know, about a game. Like you have to have played it or at least know what the hell it is. You can't just make an ad about like, oh, well, this is a fighting game with two. You know,
I mean, as much money as those ads cost to make. I would be really surprised if they don't know about the game. And if they don't, why not give them the game and make them play the game?
I just don't think the people that are in charge of making the decisions of how the ads are structured are actually the ones that really give a shit about the product. They're just like, well, you know, our market research shows that, you know, if you show two characters punching each other in the face, that, you know, X number of people will buy it.
And yet these are support things because at the end of the day, the 3DS surged back on great games.
I was going to say, it didn't take an ad. I don't think I've seen
a 3DS
ad.
It didn't take an ad. It took really great games. It took the 3DS coming...
And a price cut.
Wait, so yeah, I'm trying to wonder.
The price cut made a big difference, but I think also having like Ocarina of Time 3DS, which worked out great, fantastic Zelda title be on there, right? Don't you think?
Oh, no, the price cut, it was Mario Kart and Mario Land 3D dropping at the same. I mean, that was the drop. That was the whoa.
So
that was Skrillex 3DS.
That was the dub drop.
So like currently you're saying that like the current lineup of Vita games may be good, but they're too far spaced? or there's just nothing really out there to really make someone be like, all right, I have to have a Vita. Like, this is a go-to game.
Are you a Vita player?
A Vita player for life.
So, so what brought you?
For life. I got a tattooed on me.
All right, What brought you into the Vita?
All right, so I am a Sony fanboy.
Yeah. But so what?
Prior to when I got into
it. What brought you into it?
The marketing, actually. Like, the original marketing of, like, hey, this is a PlayStation experience. Yeah. No, not a game. Weird. There was a PlayStation experience, PS3 experience on the Vita, even before I touched the device, to the point where, like, when the Vita came out in Japan, I imported mine in from Japan before it was out in the U.S. Like, I needed it that badly.
You are a fanboy. No kidding.
Yeah. You are definitely a fanboy.
Uncharted and Wipeout. It was a new Uncharted experience.
So I should enjoy it.
Because, you know, the games, going back and looking at the threads, the games that we were talking about the most were Uncharted and Luminous.
Which is a great game. It just didn't do enough new. It's still, I think, one of the best games on the system, but it's not going to rally a system seller when you can play it on your PSP, on your iPhone, on your iPad, on your Xbox.
You know what's funny is, you know, of course, I know James Milkey really, really well. We worked together for a long time, and he was the exec producer on that game. And they put so much work into...
like polygons or something, right?
Into turning the game from 2D into 3D. And at the end of the day... From a insider perspective, you're like, oh, it's so fucking cool because now you can take all those blocks and you can put texture maps on them and you can do all these different things with them and you can like apply lightings and you can put shadows against them and you can do all these different things. Whereas to the end user, it's like, yeah, I see blocks and they have different special effects on them and there's music. And it's it's like such a there's like a weird disconnect there, right? But the end, but the other thing is that Milkey did an amazing soundtrack for that game. Yeah. I think the soundtrack for that game is really great. Except that, back to the thing, is that it's a music game, and now music games have become so much a part and parcel of everything, like whether it be 360 in Guitar Hero or, you know, something as simplified as song pop on your phone. You're really, like, music games are popularized. They're not – the novelty of them is no longer what it was.
It's just been a while.
Like, when Luminous on PSP came out, you're like, holy shit, I'm, like, playing this game, and it's in sync with my music, and this is so cool. And now you've had a lot of experiences
like that. So who here – at the table has a PSP. Or I'm sorry.
A Vita?
A Vita.
I have a Vita.
I have a Vita.
I want a Vita.
Okay. So
you do want one?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, let me ask, why do you
but
want
one?
But
not enough to buy it yet. I haven't bought one yet.
No, so. and I want one too now, but it's because there's a game that came out. I just want to know like what your system sellers
What's the game you want? Yeah.
Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Dude, okay.
Well, here's
so
the thing.
Good.
Here's the thing.
So good.
I would not in 2012 in an end of the year review count the Vita out at all because I think that there's great games coming out for the Vita. I think there's a ton of potential in the system. I think there's a long life left in it. Like I think Sony has a lot to do outside of even marketing to really sell the Vita to people. I really like it. There's price drops ahead. Like I think I would not at all be like, well, 2012, that's the year the Vita failed, because I don't think that we've seen the beginning of the PC.
Yeah, I don't even think a device can fail in its launch year, right? Like
okay,
maybe, but
it's sold.
The Sony route of we put out devices for the longer lifetime. Like they think how long there was the PSP, then the PSP Go, and it still took a while before the Vita came, right? I think the Vita is still ramping up. It has had probably the best titles that come out versus the PSP and the PSP Go. Closely related to when the device actually hit the States.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that there is just not enough push to on the game side to be like really run home that this is a game that is made for the Vita to run home.
Yeah.
Like Uncharted was an amazing. There's only one thing I disliked about Uncharted, and that's actually probably not a problem to dislike. Is like I felt it was kind of too long. But if you think about Uncharted, it had a great story. It had all
so,
the
aspects. You're talking about Golden Abyss.
Golden Abyss, yeah.
You really liked it.
I actually liked the story. Okay. I liked going back and like having a different view of Drake, but still being, you know, I know this character. I know what he's like. And they did a great job of like using almost, I believe, all the aspects of the Vita hardware-wise they wanted to do. The touchscreen, the front screen, the lighting, and all. Like,
and for those of you who wonder, by the way, like all, other than in a consulting role, which you probably didn't have anything to do with, like that's made by a totally separate developer.
Yeah, it's completely made separate. Amy was one of the only people that like really, really were paid. You know, were close to the team because the story was tied together. Amy Henning, yeah.
So I mean, yeah, so yeah, you're close to Drake, but. So I think that actually...
I made the website. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as someone who works around that stuff all the time, to be that engaged by it is a kind of good testament to it being successful at a drive.
I mean, I was definitely looking forward to it before it came out.
It didn't... the thing to me, and this goes back to one of the things that we talked about back then that still resonates for me, is that while I think the hardware is – I think the hardware is really cool. I think that it does a lot of really great things. I love the screen on it. I love the fact that I have two sticks on it. But the
back touch screen too.
The back
really
touch
cool.
is interesting. There's some interesting
– Interesting. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
There's some interesting interaction options that they have there. The two sticks are not the direct – one-to-one equivalent of having a dual touch controller in your hands. They just don't have the same throw. They don't have the same feel. It's not the same. It's not the same.
It's not what you're used to.
It's not what you're used to. Right. And so there's not that immediacy of it. There's not that like, oh, I get it. I'm like, blah, 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 I'm going to start playing. Hence why you have people jumping around, diving around the rooftops playing Call of Duty.
Well, before we go too much farther, too, I wanted to say you said that you don't have a Vita tattoo, but I like the idea of you walking into a shop and saying, "Can I get a?
Can I get need a Vita tattoo?"
And the guy's like, "Why don't you not? Why don't we wait?
Yeah, you
let's wait
until
2013 at least and see what the system does. Let's not get
super
it.
Quickly." I think the problem with the Vita over the 3DS is that the handheld space is a unique one.
Yeah.
With encroaching games, you have a little bit of time to play. It used to be you have a Game Boy, but now you have that on your phone. Those instant time wasters, or even Twitter or Facebook on your phone.
Life is Magic, I've heard, is really good.
I hear it's fantastic. The 3DS, Touché. As much as people shit on Nintendo for being a kiddie console, serves that role where parents feel safe buying that console for their kids to have and throw around and play Mario and
don't underestimate
whatever.
That.
That's the that's like Nintendo brand,
right?
For sure.
And the yeah. Vita, for better or worse, as much as I love a lot of Sony franchises like Uncharted, God of War, doesn't have that. I'm going to give this to my kid, and it hasn't separated itself out enough. Why would I play this versus playing the home experience? But for unique people or select people, it's great, but it serves the niche for when I'm on a plane going yep. to a gig. But otherwise, it's a very odd.
So you,
and retrospectively,
space.
while we think the technical specs of the Vita are really cool, I have to say that for as much as I malign my SSS for like making crazy comments, it kind of was correct, although I'm not sure as correct as he thought. About, we were all thinking like, oh my god, this game, this machine, this Vita is so sexy. It's got dual sticks. It's got 3G. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got GPS. It's got back touch and front touch. In reality, though, we were a little bit maybe over the top. And he just says this. He gave us this classic. Says, the system is ugly as sin. Anyone who thinks it's sexy has obviously been masturbating to the Sears catalog and never seen Vicky's Secret in their life.
Wow.
Wait. All right. So when I hear that, it's like, all right, give me an example of what's sexier. Because if he's going to say iPhone, then we're just talking two different
things. Also,
subjects.
Who calls it Vicky's Secret?
Yeah.
It was a tweet.
That's the main
Someone
thing.
Who reads Sears. Right?
A 15-year-old kid who's masturbating.
Okay,
to
go
it.
Ahead.
But by the way, I think that there's a good point, a bit of point there. I mean, look, it was, and this was the gripe that I had going back then, is that it, like for the new name and everything else, is it really was just a PSP2. It wasn't something new. It wasn't like breathing life Vita into the system. It was like, here's PSP evolved into what you thought you wanted before.
With a bunch
better
of
screen.
Wicked tech. Yeah.
Yeah. With a bunch of wicked tech.
But
for us, that's cool. Yeah. But for mainstream, what is the separating piece? What is the piece that you look at and go, holy shit, that thing's badass?
Yeah. Well, it always goes back to the software. Always.
It really does.
Always. And like I, you know, I think as a device, it's very impressive. But like I said, and this is just my personal taste, but until P4 Golden came out, I was like,
but even then,
I really need to get one of these.
I don't think you want a Vita. I think you want P4 Golden on your PS3.
Well, like, no.
I do. Want it
I think
portably.
I totally I want
think,
PS4 on
I think
my
you're absolutely
on
right.
On PS3.
Yeah, no.
On my Golden. I want it on my Golden.
You're totally right. I just want a high-def version of PS4. Or Persona 4, not PS4.
And this is the only place. That's where I think the Vita's in a weird space where it has these great
So it's competing against itself.
Right.
Yeah, or competing games. Against its brother.
But people don't have time to play that type of game.
Well, even
handheld.
Look at All-Stars. All-Stars, you got a copy on the Vita with the PlayStation. Like, that is competition. You're basically competing for playtime. So, and that's not bad for
well,
Sony,
I don't think
but
so I think
the software's almost, you know, interchangeable at this point. Go ahead.
To talk about crossplay, because they instituted crossplay in a number of titles over the fall, is that the whole idea there is start to project the, like, you can take PlayStation with you anywhere. So you've got PlayStation Mobile on your Android phone. You've got PlayStation Portable in your Vita. You've got PlayStation at home through your PS3. And they're like trying to build that whole like PlayStation all in your life thing. And I think that that'll probably be a big mess. I'm really curious actually to see what Sony will do from a lifestyle perspective at CES, because that's where they'll start messaging. Like, we'll start to get an idea. Like, they're really trying to blend these pieces together.
We'll know. when it comes to TVs. And this is me not trying to give away any information, or even if I know anything, especially on the like huge Sony scale. But if you start seeing any form of PlayStation on a TV completely separated from the actual hardware, like from, you know, your PS3 or PS4, whatever.
What do you mean, if? I mean, they bought Gaikai.
But we'll see what happens. That's all I'm saying. Right? Only time of connection was with the XMB. But we'll see what happens.
I mean, we're gonna talk about new consoles in the next show. But I mean, is there anyone who doubts that Gaikai's acquisition was a move to the future of what PlayStation will be? Because it projects them across. It makes them no longer hardware dependent.
It's a whole other subject, and it's a whole you're right, subject. But there's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on there. And
a lot of no commenting going on.
Yeah, I there's a reason I choose to not comment on this on this question.
Well, there you go. I am going to see. Sony's has a big booth at CES, and yeah. I have plans to go to that booth.
I'm going too.
Yeah, and they say that there are things that I'm interested in, so we already know there's something there to see no matter what.
You know what's funny, Mike, is I went to CES for 7 years, and then I haven't been for the last 3 years. So I'm kind of curious. It's going to be weird to go back because I haven't been in, you know, 2 or 3 years.
I haven't gone in 2 years. Good. I'll be going this year, too.
Hopefully this is the next thing you want to talk about, because I'll move right on to it right now. Get ready to see a bunch of iPhone accessories, because that's what CES is these days. It's docks and accessories and, you know, a lot of smartphone tablet accessories. Mm. That's how it works. So that now maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad. I've definitely seen some cool accessories.
Because the side note.
But yeah, if you've skipped CES for 4 years, like
3 years,
Yeah, I think you will be shocked to see how much handheld tablets and smartphones have taken over it.
Well, I tell you what, one of the things I'm going to do since we're like talking about handheld stuff is I'm going to jump in the middle of the forum road right now and say, you know what? I was wrong, actually, about the whole like iOS is going to take out handheld gaming, because it really has segregated itself very nicely to where iOS has built itself a nice ecosystem that is what it is and does its, you know, 30-second to 5-minute to 5-hour gaming, because there are great long-term engaged games. I really want to play them on my iPad, not my iPhone, but I can like access them through my iPhone at times.
Raven Sword.
And that
gotta throw that in there.
Just today came out today. Yeah, it's really good.
Checked it out.
Shadowlands.
It is called. Really good.
And that doesn't detract
Life
from
is
my
Magic is good too.
Yeah, I heard that.
And that doesn't detract from, you know, P4 Golden. And it doesn't detract from me wanting to play 3DS or me going out and, you know, buying from one of our awesome listeners.
Hang on. 1 second.
A DSi XL.
Shocking. The company behind the Mac was able to carve out a market all its own? Like, was able to nail down a dedicated market?
But, Mike, I guess
market?
The point is that, last year I was erroneously saying that Apple's positioning in the mobile space would, like, dominate everybody else. And that was wrong.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because it's not going to, because it's something else. You think it will?
Yeah, I mean, it has taken it. It's just shifted what otherwise we talked about gamer guilt in the first segment, or how you spend your time. And there was a time before when I would have a Game Boy or whatever with me, or a DS or an Advance, I'd carry it with me. But now, if I'm just going out and around, I don't, because I have my phone.
If you're going to get on a plane, which one are you going to play? If you're going to get on Transpo, like which one are you going to play?
Right. Well, then I'll have a dedicated system. But I'm a minority. I can say that my in-laws. My mother and father-in-law both had a DS and a DS Lite, and then they have not upgraded because they have iPhones, and they're playing Rider Rumble, they're playing Letterpress, they're playing
all those games.
They love it because they sit there and then laugh at each other. And
it's because there's been no new brain training. That's the problem.
Well, there has, though. Sony has done one.
Smart as.
And then there was another one on 3DS, too, that was, I don't remember what it was. But it's like this.
I think your point is good in that it's not, the DS is no longer a mass market device, because the iPhone is a mass market device.
Right. Right.
Whereas in Japan, before the iPhone came out, the DS was what you use. Like, that's what you use to talk to your friends. That's what you use as a mass market device.
And here, I mean, my mom had one, but both my in-laws had one. Both of my brother-in-laws had one, and their wives, and they would play that. And now it's totally been replaced by their phone.
At this moment in time, if you want to carry around a device like that, you just put it in your phone and you have a smartphone. And we're still continuing to see people who have never owned smartphones before go for the iPhone, go for these really powerful smartphone devices. I know a guy that walked around with a flip phone till this year, and he decided to finally get a device.
What about Apple's reluctance to enter into actually making and publishing games on its own? Because one of the things that happened at E3 this year was Sony unveiled the addition to PlayStation Plus of monthly free games, which, by the way, I completely underestimated the value of that. It's been huge for them, and now they've instituted it on Vita, and it's become a really great value proposition. You subscribe as a PlayStation Plus member, you get games for free on your PS3 every month, you get games for free on your Vita every month, you get discounts on buying games. It's actually a fantastic subscription
model. Yeah, speaking of marketing, when PS Plus came out, everyone's like, oh, that's just the other Xbox Live. But you're right.
It's not.
What they're calling it now is Instant Game Collection, because you basically have access to tons of different games. And they can. That's good for Sony, too, because they can make games hits by getting them through the
PS
Plus
service. Apple doesn't need to do that. Like, I got all of the Fruit Ninja games and Jetpack Joyride for free because publishers
but
are already...
So great, so they don't have to do it now, but PlayStation is doing it, and it's a great value being a PlayStation... You know, if you're a PlayStation person and you've got a PS3 and you've got a Vita and maybe eventually a PlayStation mobile phone on the Android network, and Android system.
Apple doesn't have to do it, but they're missing a huge opportunity.
Well, no, here's what they are doing. What they are doing is, if you go into iTunes right now, there's a best of 2012 list at the top, and there are apps all over that 2012 list that Apple has chosen to be the best of 2012. Apple is selling more apps by promoting those apps, so they're already like picking and choosing who they're promoting and who they're not. B, I've talked to developers who have heard from Apple and said, you need to make these assets look like this, you need to make these look like this. They're already kind of playing this role of publisher where they're sort of like tweaking and building this up and doing this.
They're not doing it
in the way Nintendo does it, where they completely publish games, where they develop their own games, or even more traditional publishers where they actually like are involved in marketing and all that stuff. But they are very much curating that App Store marketplace, and they're very much putting their hands in and saying, we want this app to do this, we want this app to do this. So I think that is the key, like you said. They don't need to do it. Like, look how popular the App Store has been. Apple's making money hand over fist. They're the biggest company in the world these days.
But it could be a mistake. I agree. They could have more.
I'm not saying mistake so much as an advantage for Sony that they unveiled that I underestimated was the value of adding game delivery to PlayStation Plus. And that was a really, you know, I think at the time we all sort of looked at it and said, oh, they're adding these games and not that big a deal. But in the end, it's a great value proposition.
Do you think Microsoft does something like that next gen?
I think that Microsoft has evidence that they're already interested in doing that by virtue of selling subsidized Xboxes through subscribing to Live.
I think there's some magic formula of that meeting backwards compatibility that is like, you know, I mean, that's already what PlayStation Plus is doing. But that's how you treat backwards compatibility. You go, look. You know, we're not going
to. Compatibility is a service you have to pay for monthly.
I'm rolling my eyes because
that's terrible, but why do you laugh?
Seems complicated.
That's kind of what I think.
They've played around with it, like they've had deals for gold members on Xbox, but they haven't done it to the extent that Sony does, where they're actually like giving and delivering games to specific subscriber members. So, I think they've played around with it, and I do think you're right. I mean, I was just thinking about, we were talking in the other room about next year and new consoles and what we're going to see, and I'm sure we're going to talk on the next show about it. Don't forget that all these services, all these apps, all these subscriptions, all these things are sort of laid on to these consoles. They didn't release with these, whereas the next consoles, they are built specifically
They are baked in.
Right. Microsoft is going to want to sell Microsoft is going to sell Netflix subscriptions and Hulu subscriptions, all these things. Like, right now it's kind of a business for them.
It's not subscriptions. Like, take it a step further. It's that every piece of your identity, Mike, whatever subscriptions you have, Twitter, Hulu, Facebook, all wired all the way through, and everybody who's like doing anything on that system has access to all those.
Goes right through that Xbox 720 that I got on my TV.
Or the Orbis, whichever way you want to look at it. It'll be the same way. And look, that's the way we're moving across all of our platforms. So E3, one of the things that also happened there was a tremendous attempt by a number of publishers to have like great big buzz. We're back to the big E3s of old. And yet everybody's response seemed to be pretty tempered for sort of along the lines of E3 has become soulless. What's the future of E3? Do you guys feel like it's become soulless? Has it become just another excuse to show us 35 shooters?
They just need to bring back like more booth babes, I think. That'll
more booth babes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, as many hot women skimpily dressed as possible. No, honestly, that's not true. Sorry, Mom.
Because there was a lot of
your mom wanted that to be true.
No.
His mom is booth babe.
I don't read Vicky's Secret, guys. I don't read Vicky's
Secret. You just look at the pictures.
I just look at the pictures. No, but I think that indies is a big opportunity for E3. I think that seeing more indie games in there. I mean, PAX does
as opposed to DICE or GDC.
I mean, PAX does a great job with indies, and I've been very impressed by what PAX is doing. Now, I have my other issues with PAX and the way that that conference is run, but I think that E3, you know, the Indiecade floor, the past two E3 years, some of the best games I've seen have been at the Indiecade booth.
Could not agree more.
Or the demos are hands-on time because the guys are so passionate about it.
I know. They're great guys, and I think that could really be expanded a lot, and I think that would take away from this whole idea of soulless, because you're right. Like, we're kind of seeing games where you walk into a room and they sit down and show you, you know, a 10-minute script that they've gone over and over and over, and they've shown to everyone. They've shown it. They're going to show it at GDC.
Well, and the game was built by a team of like 1,000.
Right. You don't know who that guy is. Yeah. And,
let me just throw this. How many of the games that were heartily promoted at E3 were shooters, ultimately?
How many of them are out?
Many of them, because E3 has become very...
I feel like there were a lot that haven't. I guess it may be like 60-40. I don't know.
But still, like, you're literally bombarded with shooter after shooter after shooter after shooter.
Well, I want somebody to combine a shooter with The Walking Dead.
Man,
that's what I like.
Oh, that'd be... Wait, yeah,
and maybe give it to Activision
that,
and have it be awesome.
And I'm not saying that I don't enjoy a good shooter, because I'm quite enjoying Far Cry 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, that was also before Black Ops 2 came out.
Yeah.
And I like Black Ops 2. It's a great game, except it didn't break records. And
well, actually, it did.
It broke records.
It broke the record of getting to 1 billion faster than anybody else had.
Faster than Avatar.
Yeah, that's what Activision... but no, I know
that's
there
a record breaking.
There were red flags going up at Activision's year because, and I've been saying this for like years now, the second that a Call of Duty game doesn't outsell in every believable in every possible way, the second that it doesn't outsell its predecessor in every possible way, Activision starts getting a little worried and like, this might not last forever.
Maybe
we
should
not
bring back
forever.
Guitar Hero.
Maybe we should do something else. So I do think that is going to be kind of a wake-up call to all the shooter games that we saw at E3 this year, in that people might at some point get tired of shooter games. Surprise,
well, I think it's
surprise.
Ebb and flow. I think it's ebb and flow. Like right now, Call of Duty was that silver bullet of this generation that really started this trend of like, we're going to do shooters and it's going to be super popular.
But is it shooters or is it super saturation of guys in Arctic camo fatigues with a green wife beater and an AK-47?
I mean, we could tell games that didn't do well, which is Warfighter.
Medal of Honor, yeah.
Medal of Honor, right? Like, it didn't sell well, didn't do well.
It was terrible.
Had trouble development cycle.
Oh. It's the same. But regardless, like, I think people are starting to get...
You know what,
they've
though?
Come to their, like, fulfillment
of
that.
You can't be an also-ran in the military shooter genre right now, because you've got Call of Duty in there. You've got these big players where...
I think the only shooter that actually did really interesting stuff by still being a shooter and a military shooter was Spec Ops, because it gave you some form of decision-making, right? But it had a really interesting story, and that's actually what pushed it to be stand out from the rest of these
and
other stuff.
And fair enough. Like, I haven't personally played that, but that's what sort. I mean, I have to give props to anyone in the AAA shooter space that's trying to introduce something new, even if it doesn't work. Because, I mean, I think that's what the genre needs right now is some.
It's
new
the same
stuff.
Thing in the MMO genre, though. Everybody, it's another WoW clone. It's another. So it's for shooters, it's another Call of Duty clone. Everybody's chasing that golden goose because they think they can do it also, or at least get under the coattails. And I think in both genres, we've seen. No, you can't.
That like, bullet's, yeah, that bullet shot.
It don't want that. Yeah.
You know, it's another good note for E3, though. Like, XCOM was one of the biggest games of E3. That's one of the games that I loved at E3. Wait, and I think it's fulfilled on that potential.
Do
that
you
we
think
saw
it was a media best of E3 or a popular best of E3? Because I feel like it was the former,
that's
but
fair.
Not necessarily the latter.
Yeah, I don't know if people quite got into it. I think the media really liked it.
It was an enthusiast best.
But
which,
I do think that it
crosses both.
I do think that in actually releasing, it's delivered quite a bit on that. Like, it's actually spread out into the mainstream a little bit, so that people are sort of getting into that
some.
Idea. So yeah. So I mean, maybe that's a good note in that people are going to take a chance on other genres, like turn-based strategy. If you could predict that a turn-based strategy game would have done as well as XCOM did, I don't know that, you know, people.
All right,
would
so I'm going to let you guys wrap this up to draw this to an end. How soulless has E3 become, and what will 2013's E3 be, Christian?
E3 has become very corporate and very official, and everybody's scripted. It didn't used to be that. Everybody's E3 stories of love and yore and yesterday are these crazy things where someone let something slip, and as the business becomes bigger, everything becomes soulless. It's like a press junket now for a movie. 2013 E3 will be similar to last year's E3, except hopefully we'll see new consoles, which will make everybody forget how soulless it is, because we'll be fucking excited.
Jeff?
Man... Christian, that was good. What Christian?
Yeah, that's hard to beat.
what Christian said, more or less. I don't know. I think that there's still some pretty interesting stuff to be found at E3, despite the corporate nature of it. But it does more every year requires more and more like sort of personal digging to find mm-hmm. that cool stuff. Like it's not what you get served is the top bill that they want you to see. You got to find your own stuff that's cool.
It's sort of like a Vegas buffet where there's a million Petit Fours that all look exactly the same.
Right.
Don't fill up on bread.
No,
don't
fill
that's up on number bread. One key. At
that's
the
right. And if you gamble, they'll bring you free booze. True. So.
Mike, what would you fill up on this year?
Here's the thing: E3 is a chance for the biggest studios ever, that are around right now, to show off their biggest titles. And it's up to us, the fans, to decide whether we want to pay attention to them or not. There are so many other distractions and other things to check out in terms of indie games, digital distribution, the App Store, all these emerging markets. There's so many other things that we don't have to pay attention to what they're doing. So if E3 is smart, EA, what's the organization?
ESA.
ESA. If the ESA is smart, they will realize there's a lot of other things that we care about besides these big name AAA titles. So hopefully, if they know what they're doing, they'll put more options in there in terms of the things that we're seeing and what actually people are interested in. So with that, and plus, these consoles, like we said, they're built for these markets. They're built for these new things. Yeah. So if they can show that stuff off at E3, like Walking Dead, like these episodic games that are blowing up, that'll be really cool.
Jason.
I think E3 is very corporate and has lost some of the allure that it had originally. I'm going to go with a different perspective here and go from the studio side and maybe not from the ESA or from the publisher side. And I'm going to say that which something that we try to do, which we did at this E3, is like at the end of our E3.
By the way, it's Jason works for Naughty Dog.
I work for Naughty Dog. Yeah. Naughty Dog. So at the end of our E3, close to the last couple of hours, we just opened up our demo to anyone and everyone who could fit inside the room. And we just kept filling in people until they told us we have to shut it down.
The one in the hangar?
No. The one upstairs, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Last of Us, right?
For Last of Us, yeah. So I think that to bring back some of the lore of E3, we need, I think, studios should take more of the reins and start being like, hey, look, let's do stuff for our fans. Let's have community-driven events to show our fans some special stuff only for them. Let's give them, because those are the people we're trying to sell to, right? Sell to is probably a bad word, but that's the stuff that we're trying to get to, right? Journalists, they will have their opportunities. They have multiple opportunities throughout the year. We can even bring them in the studio, right?
Plenty.
But to bring back some of the joys of E3 and the excitement that E3 brings. Yes, you show if new consoles are time, like let's show that stuff. You show new services, but I think that's what the press conference is for. That's for the mass public. For those who actually can come to LA and do it or wherever it's going to be at, let's give them something, an experience that they couldn't get anywhere else besides E3.
Look, it's called PAX right there.
That's an option too.
You said sell to, but I mean, I'll throw you a line here. I mean, it's not about selling to. It's the fact that these are your core people who really love you. They're the people who, in any other hobby, are the people who have a club membership to whatever it might be. It's like a car club membership or a movie club membership.
Those are the people that like we
they live and breathe your stuff and they love it. And you know what? You're right. There needs to be a way to interchange with those people. And in the internet world, because the video game business is so very internet connected, there's kind of a PR clampdown that's prevented you from being able to give those folks that extra stuff. Like what is it? Like that extra stuff that you wanted. And it's not just more drink more Ovaltine. Because always disappointing.
Yeah, yeah.
Ovaltine's good, though.
It is good. All right. I got to go with this one to wrap this segment up from Cats Akimbo, because, you know, there's nothing better than dual-wielding cats.
Yes, absolutely. John Woo would approve.
My best holiday gaming memory doesn't even involve me playing a game. When I was young, I watched my brother play Final Fantasy VIII on the PC over most of the holiday break. We'd talk about strategies for boss fights and what areas to explore and laugh at the kid who makes fun of you by saying, your mom wears cowboy boots. I'm sorry, your mom wears combat boots. We stayed up late at night, and it was late on a snowy Christmas Eve because we were too excited to sleep, of course. It was some of the most fun I'd ever had with my brother.
How do you... Oh, his name is just Cats Akimbo.
Yes.
That whole story, I was like, where are the dual-wielding cats?
Where's the dual-wielding cats?
I was like, I want to see the cats get dual-wield.
That's his handle.
All right, that's very cute, and I like that story. But next time, tell a story about dual-wielding cats.
Stick around. We still have one more segment to go, and we're obviously going to have to hold over some of the big Game of the Year discussion into the next episode. So we've got tons to do, and only five more segments to go.
Holy crap.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Stick around.
Happy holiday. Happy holiday. May the calendar keep bringing happy holidays to you.
Someone gave Micah control of the fader.
I would like to point out that the conversation that was happening in the waiting room was much better than the actual conversation.
Epic. Hold on. Previously on Weekend Confirmed.
If you had, we were freaking talking it up.
Oh, yeah.
Talking it out.
We were having an epic discussion about Dishonored, and before that we were talking about The Walking Dead.
Panelists now include Jeff, 2N1T, Kanata.
Back.
Yay!
Witches.
Andrew Yoon.
Hello.
Best dressed man in video games media. Andrew Yoon. How should I enter you? Red?
Yes.
Red.
Sure. That
just
works.
Red. And James Stevenson. I still love Ratchet. I still love Ratchet. Oh, voice of an angel.
Voice of an angel.
James Stevenson, voice of an angel. Yes.
This marks the first time that Andrew and I have been on Weekend Confirmed together.
Yay!
Is it really? It's been a long time, but we always miss each other.
Well, I think we were on like one episode together sometime last year.
Maybe it was the last holiday special.
Maybe.
I think we were in the same building, but I think you left and then I took the second episode.
I would never leave. You know me. I stick around because as long as there's booze, I'm here.
There's a lot of booze. And pizzas will be here soon.
I hope the world doesn't end so that people can actually hear this happen. Otherwise,
yes.
It could be terribly like,
this is
a big waste of our time.
And I want to reassure the amazing Weekend Confirmed listeners that I am doing my best to maintain sobriety as best as I can.
That's not true.
Because the last year when we did this, slipped a little down the hole.
what steps are you taking? To it.
Look at this. I'm holding up Andrea. Her glass marked red has about a shot and a half of whiskey, which she's on. Like, this is not the first one.
Well, granted, it's because she spilled that previous shot.
She did.
And a half.
Right. And we have a full bottle of Fat Tire here.
Wait, you forced me to open that bottle.
Wait, these segments are 25 minutes long. I need more than one drink.
There's some cold Fat Tire sitting on the floor in there.
It's not cold.
Yell it. Yell it. Yell at our producer. I'm going to bring it in for you.
All right. So. Here's how far we've gotten off the rails. I have copious amounts of prepared materials here.
Oh my God. Are you seriously still congratulating yourself for preparing for a show?
Shut up.
No, listen. He deserves it. He's never done it all year. Give him a pat on the back.
You're telling me?
Wow. Wow, hold on.
I can't believe the raft of shit I got for bringing up a really good game in the first segment.
I'm going to put my head back up and see if I can look over my shoulder and see the license plate for that bus that just ran down.
Tell us about
the quest. But here's the thing is, we can go ahead and start doing a little bit of Game of the Year. There's obviously going to be lots of Game of the Year, so we're going to have to talk about that next get show as
episode?
Well.
Episode?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You won't get to hear it for a fucking week, people. Sorry.
The thing that was amazing,
we'll all tweet about it. Don't worry.
Looking back at this is, how do people get so upset about there not being good games? There's so many good games.
Who's upset about it? Yeah. So I think you're misinterpreting.
Have you
what
read the interwebs?
I have. And you know what? There's a weird thing on the internet right now where people think a good game is, and I'm not saying a game is its Metacritic score, but I'm using that to frame the discussion. So don't say that everything is its Metacritic score. I don't believe that. I really, really don't believe that. But and people look at it as, it's not this transcendent 90-plus filled year. There's not a lot of, like, oh my God games that you couldn't miss that elevated the medium in
But I think there are.
There are lots of them, yes.
I think there are several.
Dude, we haven't even talked about Journey.
Journey's one of them. Sure, Journey's one of them. But when you look
and
at
that
like,
is transcendent. I don't even care about what the Metacritic score was for Journey. Journey was like such an impactful game.
And it would be
us.
In my top five games of the year list. My point, I guess, is you look at what were considered to be the gigantic games of the year, right? The Assassin's Creed 3, the Diablo 3, the Borderlands 2, the Black Ops 2, the Halo 4. You look through this list of these games that were supposed to be the big things, that were the heavily, heavily marketed games. And while none of them were a bad game, they were all very good games even, I don't think any of them
delivered that like transcendent, like, oh my god, this is evolved or revolutionized gaming in any way. They were all excellent games, and you should play probably everything I just listed. But on the same token, it wasn't like you didn't have that sort of Uncharted experience where you had that marketing build up to Uncharted 2. Hi, Jason. And then
wait, are you saying that Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3 were transcendent?
I'm saying Uncharted 2 was.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would make that argument for Uncharted 3, because Uncharted 2 was the game that took it to that new level.
Right.
But Uncharted 2 was. Where Uncharted 2, you saw it all, you're like, oh my god, I can't wait. And that game completely delivered on everything that you expected out of it.
Uncharted 2 took a good game, Uncharted 1, and turned it into a franchise, that actually turned it into a franchise that people eagerly await for the next one. Assassin's Creed 2 was also one of those like transformative
games. And I think Brotherhood even delivered.
I would disagree. I would say there were confirmations of the first game. Now, maybe not so much Assassin's Creed 2, because I think Assassin's Creed 2 cleaned up a lot of where Assassin's Creed 1 took missteps. But I think that Uncharted 1 was a fantastic game.
Uncharted 1 was a great game, but Uncharted 2 confirmed it. Holy shit. Uncharted 1 did not have the holy shit.
Guys, I don't mean to like interrupt, like, but aren't we talking about our favorite games of this year?
No, but we're talking about my game of the year, 2012. There we go. Past glories.
But we are Vikings.
Well, okay. The real point here is people have said this year is disappointing, and I don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot of good games, but where I do see the disappointment for people and why people understand where people are coming from is that they said, well, all of the really big games, the games we were hoping would deliver and be like OMG WTF, were very good. They weren't OMG WTF.
Or in the case of Resident Evil 6, not good.
I'll give you three games that fit your criteria.
Okay.
One, Far Cry 3.
Yes.
But let me just list them.
Far Cry 3, Guild Wars 2, and XCOM.
But which of those were the ones that you were pointing to in the manner in which James was describing? Because that's the thing.
I think all three of those games. And maybe Guild Wars for the MMO PC. But Guild Wars 2, I'd buy. But Far Cry and XCOM were both, oh, I hope this is really good. And both of them delivered on levels. And I can't see too much about Far Cry 3 because I'm only 2-3 hours into it. Though, if we went into my list of Game of the Year, it would be an honorable mention at this point. And the only reason it gets dropped to the honorable mention is I haven't played enough to be sure. Those were not the big hyped games. And I think that's the thing. Like, all those games that were supposed to be, none of them actually delivered the top tier.
I think 95 OMG, I must have it. None of them were bad either.
Halo 4 absolutely 100% is that. What they did with Halo 4, with 343 coming in and filling very big shoes that Bungie left behind, I think they more than surpassed expectations and in fact improved upon a franchise that was getting maybe a little stale, and they did some really great things. And they humanized.
Wait, hold on. They did this. You can't have it both ways, because they very much followed the Bungie
formula, but they
improved upon the Bungie formula.
Did they? I mean, they did.
They humanized Chief in a way that we haven't really seen before.
I will give you that. Their story is better than any previous Bungie story. Their cinematics usage is better than any previous, like their production values, all of that was at a brand new level for the Halo franchise. I think gameplay wise, there was room to still grow. Like, Prometheans were really good, really cool, great replacement for the Flood. But when it comes down to it, you had, what, 3 new enemies and 4 or 5 new guns, and that's it? Across the entire game, 1 new vehicle, 2 new vehicles. I mean, still a very good game, but I think, you know, you kind of saw that across all of the reviews.
It was highly polished, iterative design.
Yeah, it was very good. Did it blow our minds? Did it reset what we think of Halo the way Uncharted 2 did from Uncharted 1? That's why I think those people have it.
Are we going to go into every year now being like, oh, you've got to blow me away? Because there's going to come...
What's wrong with wanting that?
You're saying that's a bad thing.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like, how many times can you be blown away? Like, there's only so many times you can have that super new experience.
And it's okay that 2012 might be quote-unquote disappointing. There's still lots of great...
No, come on, it's not disappointing at all. 2012 is not disappointing. And you guys are holding these games that are much deeper into a franchise up to a standard for games that were like the second game in the franchise.
I don't think it's really a problem to want, you know, new franchises or franchises.
I've had a more difficult time this year of coming up with my number one game of the year.
I think than I have in recent memory.
I agree.
But is that because there's no runaway game, or is that because the bar is lower?
It's because the bar is higher,
and there are so many games that have met that bar, and they're so good.
See, I had the same problem, but my problem was there was no, and in some years you've had three or four runaway games, so it's hard to pick. In this year, I don't think there was any runaway game. I think there were several games that were very close, but there wasn't a runaway this
I think there's,
for sure.
I think it's like the Tour de France.
And
there are
different
there's
games had different reasons.
And they're all juicing.
There's a whole pack. They're all juicing. Like, going back into it, oh my God, how did we miss how really, really fantastic Guild Wars 2 is?
I didn't.
Guild Wars 2 is fucking amazing.
It is completely revolutionary for the MMO space. Completely revolutionary.
I would say evolutionary, but it is such a great evolution of MMO space. And it is so well done. And it is so forward-thinking in solving problems while at the same time giving you the sort of play mechanics that you know and love and enjoy in an MMO.
But notice the qualifier that you use. You said for the MMO space. I think XCOM is like a great game. Great strategy game. There's Halo 4 is a great shooter.
Yep. Yeah.
But the games that James are talking about, you know, like Uncharted.
They're
2,
just great that, games. Like yeah, they're a like, game anyone, regardless of genre, should play that game. And I don't think this year
canonical.
Has games like that.
I think Halo transcends.
I think Uncharted 2 is definitely one of those games where it defined game design after that.
Uncharted 2 was so fucking good that like people would sit there and just watch you play it. Mm-hmm. Nothing that came out this year was
I think people
that
would watch
good.
You play
Guild
and
that's
Wars
not
too.
A that's not a dig on everything that came out this year.
Journey.
There was a lot of
Journey
great
for sure.
Walking Dead. Maybe Journey, maybe Walking Dead, but
you
there's
didn't even
a lot
put
of
Unfinished
great
Swan on this list.
The Unfinished Swan wasn't that great.
Unfinished
Swan's good.
But
it's
James,
good.
People
it's
would
good,
absolutely
but
people would absolutely watch you play Guild Wars 2 because of the dynamic.
Would your mom watch you play that?
Yes.
I mean, my mom would watch me play Uncharted 2.
And even if that's the case, fine. There are a few games that meet that list, but it's not like some of these other years where you had four or five games that meet that and clearly did that. Or even like four or five games that delivered on those expectations.
Do you not think your mom would watch you play Uncharted mom. I mean, Assassin's Creed 3 in Colonial Boston?
Yeah, for sure.
She would be like, shit.
She would watch it, but then the game
then she'd be like, oh,
great.
Wow, you're running around chasing pages on the top of rooftops. My point is, too, that it's like just because there's a lot of good games, you listed out all these games and there's tons of great games on this list. Expectations are part of why something is disappointing or not disappointing. So if the expectations are so high, then it's hard to achieve that. And at the end of a generation that is now 7 years long, the expectations are fucking astronomical. So when we come out with a lot of fantastic games or a lot of great games, but not fantastic games, that's why you can sense people are a little disappointed. People are ready to see something that like, really blows their fucking faces off. And this year was good.
Think about like when Gears of War 1 came out on Xbox.
You're like, holy shit, I can't believe this is on my
moment.
Console.
And if you release that exact same game now, you'll be like,
people
what
scoff.
What the
I
hell?
I mean, but come
why
on.
Are you
that's not even,
line,
that's not
you know?
Even a fair statement to make.
Well,
you
actually,
know what I mean?
But,
like,
but again,
hold
what are you talking about? Disappointment. You're talking about
and
expectations.
Speaking of which, you didn't put Spec Ops the Line on this list. Yeah,
but may I interject? May I interject here?
That's not a Game of the Year candidate.
What's coming out
I
about
agree,
that?
But it's a game that matters this year. It is.
What, I would put it in an honorable mention list.
What comes out in this discussion by virtue of that is how hardware and tech-driven this discussion remains, despite the fact that we're talking about content. We're talking about content, we're talking about experiences, yet it's still like, oh, well, how much of that was going to like blow you away from a tech aspect?
I don't think it's necessarily
you know what?
A tech thing.
I don't think it is either, because I played a lot of these games. I played a lot of these fucking games on my PC, and they look fantastic on my PC. Okay. Far Cry 3, I'm like, holy shit, this game, for an open world game, is gorgeous and detail-ridden on my PC. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? Like, there's just not... there were a few games that blew me away. Journey blew me away for some reasons. Walking Dead blew me away for certain reasons. XCOM blew me away. Dishonored blew me away for certain reasons. But as a whole, you look at especially like the really hyped up games, and they were great.
So what was the last game that really, quote unquote, blew you away?
Oh, I think, I mean, this year? Like,
no, not this year, just period. What was the last game that really blew you away?
No, I think Journey. I think Dishonored. I think
Walking
XCOM.
Dead.
I think Walking Dead. Walking Dead to a certain in certain aspects. Yeah.
I think Dishonored
was the. I mean, and fuck it. Dishonored is my game of the year.
I think you guys
year.
Are
Dishonored
like
is my
still
all right. We have a statement.
That, like,
quote.
We don't. I don't
James
think
Stevenson.
Like I said, we're talking about whether or not it's disappointing, quote unquote. That doesn't mean that there weren't great games. I think we both think that there's a lot of great
games. I think Halo 4 is a fantastic game. I think
2012 was a good year
for
games.
Yeah.
It was a great game for years.
It was a great year for games, but that doesn't mean it can be a great year and still be disappointing because our expectations are so high for this year. And that's my larger point, is that the expectations are so elevated after all this time that even if it's a, you know, even if the year as a whole is an 8.5, people are expecting a 9. And again, not to take back to Metacritic, but that's sort of that, like, they just want, like,
you are a tough
every
critic,
game
James.
Should be tough.
You
are
very tough.
I'm
very
jaded
tough.
This year,
or,
too.
You know, it's, think about, like, movies, you know, some years there are just a lot of good movies. And I feel like this is one of those years where there's a lot of great movies, but is there like a single defining movie where it's like,
no, you look
everyone
at the Oscar race,
everyone
and everything's close. I was reading the LA Times today, and the Oscar race is super close this year, and there's not a runaway movie. There's not even two or three runaway movies. There's seven or eight movies that are all very good and very competitive.
It's not
and
like,
that's
you know,
what the game industry feels like.
Do you remember the analogy I made? It's the NFL.
Parody.
Do you like parody or do you not like parody? Do you like it
when
a couple of teams that were dominant every decade and there were the other guys? Or do you like it when it's wide open and you never know when an RG3 is going to drive the Redskins to the top of the chart?
The Giants get shut out and
and you're like, and you don't know what's happening.
Yeah. But I think that there are, you know, it's the classic glasses half full, glasses half empty argument. I look at this list and I see glass half full because there are so many incredible.
It's a fucking bullshit analogy. Like,
no, it's
elite,
not.
Those
it's
league, it bullshit?
Play, those play against each other. That's
You're
why parody,
a bullshit analogy.
That's why parody is
you
interesting because they
the
play they
releases?
Directly go against each other. Whereas if you have three or four dominant things, that doesn't stop you from having 10 great games too. The fact that if everyone's great and no one is incredible and over the top, if there's no Uncharted 2, that's a bad thing.
No,
we
okay,
need
well,
an Uncharted 2.
Let's level the playing
field. Uncharted 2 came out
for,
this year. Do you think it would be head and shoulders above
No,
any
but
of
I'm
these
saying you
games?
Need a game.
Oh,
hold on.
That's a big point. That's a big point you just rolled over.
Hold the phone.
No, 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 no.
Hold the phone.
Exactly.
Garnet needs to take control.
Hold on.
Let's all yell.
Jeff's question. Ask your question to James.
If Uncharted 2 came out this year, would it stand head and shoulders above this list?
If Uncharted.
No, it well
no.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So the,
but,
the bar has
but
the
what
bar,
I'm saying is that
the rising
the industry
tide lifted
needs,
all boats.
Sure, it lifts all boats, but what you need is games to continue
point,
lifting that tide. And I'm saying this
Kanata.
Year maybe didn't have quite as many games pushing the tide up. We stayed at a good level, a lot of games hit that level, and yes, comparatively to 3 years ago. But again, we're talking about expectations. Disappointment is based on there being an expectation. If there's no expectation, there cannot be disappointment. And based on people's expectations, I can understand why people thought this year.
I think
was
it has more to do with how many games got pushed into next year when you're talking about expectations.
There's definitely an element of that.
Because, you know, Q1 of next year is
bonkers. But those games, if they came out this year, it's the only reason they got pushed is because they weren't ready to come out this year. And so if they come out this year, then they disappoint too.
Well, right, but like let's be fair, I think, you have to remember you said that the analogy is bullshit, and I disagree because as a consumer, you cannot buy every game. So you have to pick and choose. So they are competing for your attention. You know what I mean? As a consumer, you have to pick and choose which one you want. And so the games are going to have to decide. You have to decide as a consumer which one is the best for you.
I don't think
pointing,
we should.
Yes.
I don't think we should ever be sated with, matching what came before. You know, so yeah, Uncharted 2, if it came out, you know, exactly this year, it wouldn't be as amazing. Yeah, but that's because we want to see things keep on getting better. You know?
I just it seems to be breaking down to your argument seems to be breaking down was there wasn't one game that stood out from the pack, and I'm saying that's because the pack is so strong.
I think the average game is much better this year than, you know, the average game, you know, say 5 years ago. You know,
sure.
I think a lot more effort is going into these games, but once again, like, we still need these like tentpole releases where
my point, like, there are,
this is what shapes the future of game design. You know, I think Journey's possibly one of those games because I know a lot of people after playing that they're rethinking, like, how do we do online experiences?
Would you sacrifice the higher playing field in order to have a greater differentiation for those tentpole releases?
I would much rather play one great game and 10 shitty games in a year than I would, you know, 11 like okay games.
But we got 15 great games. We got 15 amazing experiences.
But my point goes back to it being like
you know, sure, like if a Dishonored comes out of nowhere, or even an XCOM, I think, kind of came out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
Or Journey sort of comes out of nowhere. We expect good things out of them, but not to that level. Like, those games all, and Walking Dead was a surprise, Fez was a surprise. All those games were surprises.
Fez was a quite, by the way, you want to talk about something that's quite unique. As much as I have, you know, obviously I've known Jason DeGroote for a long time, so I'm on the wrong side of the Fez argument. At the same time.
Wrong side of the Fez?
Fez like is a really That's cool why. Game. Fez does a tremendous number of interesting things. It really challenges you as a player. Mm-hmm. On the face of it, you appear to understand, oh, I know what this is. This is a platform and I rotate the world. But then it asks you to think outside that box.
It's a completely incredible.
It asks you to have a sheet of graph paper and to keep copious notes.
It does, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. But here's the thing, though.
But that is something that stands above
sure,
the bar.
But James, to your point, for you, that's your experience. And you have to remember the games are so subjective and they speak to different people in different ways. You could go, to me, the number one experience this year was Journey. But to somebody else, maybe the number one experience was Spec Ops, was Dishonored, was The Walking Dead or XCOM. Everybody has a different relationship with their game and experiences the games differently, and that's why I think it's so exciting, as Jeff said, to have like a really strong portfolio of games that we have coming out.
Sure, that's okay. I'm just saying that you hear people say disappointment, you're like, what do you mean disappointment? And you list all of those games that were kind of off the radar, that were solid games, surprisingly good games, game of the year maybe, if you want to talk Journey, Dishonored, Fez, Walking Dead.
See, the list keeps growing when you say game of the year.
Sure, exactly. Sure. No, well, and that's my top five. And we can talk about that the next show, whatever. My point is, you look at why this year, people looked at this year, why is this year going to be good? Assassin's Creed, Borderlands, Black Ops 2, maybe Far Cry,
Journey,
Halo 4,
Walking
maybe
Dead.
Journey, maybe Walking
Dead. No one knew
this year going into Walking Dead saying that will be the game
Walking
of the year.
That's not what
we're talking about. We're not talking about what they went
no,
into
no,
the year.
But that's expectations. That's what disappointment is. Disappointment is based on expectations. And
everybody
I'm saying the AAA games with the huge marketing campaigns, those didn't, none of those games
come out this year. They didn't come out this year.
Everybody
went into this year going Bioshock Infinite. And
he's right.
That's what you're talking about.
Black Ops still hit.
Black Ops still hit. But Black Ops
Halo
is a
4
known
hit.
Halo 4 still. Halo 4 has probably the biggest. If you're talking about that like AAA marketing campaign, I don't think I've ever seen anything comparable to the webisodes, the episodic content, the single player campaign. It's in everything you ever look at. Sort of marketing approach.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 4 hit you every spot.
And
Doritos, 7-Eleven.
And it's a fantastic game.
And it was one of the few games that you knew was coming out this year. Because we didn't really know anything about Assassin's Creed 3 until early this year. Same with Black Ops 2. We didn't really know a lot about that until like Q1, Q2. The only games that we really knew, hey, this is coming out in 2012, was Borderlands 2 and Halo 4. Like, those were the games that we were like, and Mass Effect 3, of course, we were like, we're going to get those big tentpole games, and we know what we're getting. Everything else we didn't find out about until this year was already happening.
So the problem I have is that there are a number of games out there that I don't want to, in the world of analogies, there are a number of games out there that I don't want to marry, but there's plenty that I want to bang all night long on a Saturday night.
Max Payne 3?
Like 4 a.m. Like 4 a.m. I want to like 4 a.m. I want to go like down a half
Tell
a bottle
really
of scotch
about Max.
And play 4 a.m. all night because it's a freaking blast. Do I want to marry it? No. Do I want to take it home for the night? Hell yeah, I want to take it home for the night.
But there's plenty of games on this list that you would marry too. To use your analogy.
But and right. So you know what? Like another on a bigger scale, like Dishonored is the game that I want to marry. But you know what? Borderlands 2 is the game that I want to take home and like fucking go crazy with every night.
And you do.
Yeah. And
I just don't know. I mean, I think we're talking in circles at a certain point of like, well, there was disappointment.
Well, again, I don't think everyone at this table agrees that this year had a lot of great games.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Wait. Everyone at this table, I agree with
we
that.
Do
I
agree?
Think we all do. I think I'm just saying, like, you hear people say this year was disappointing, and it's like, people are like, it wasn't disappointing. Look at all the great games. Like, well,
can we
yeah,
just agree
are,
that those we were, people are dumb?
We were just trying
no,
to.
No, I don't. I understand what they're saying.
This year was not disappointing, right?
Yeah. No, we were just trying to explain why it's disappointing. That's it. And I think we should
actually move on.
I mean, here's, by the way, some of the stuff that we missed. So I had told you I had this stuff lined out. Just from the first part of the year, times that we missed: Alan Wake, American Nightmare, Syndicate, Darkness 2, SSX, Binary Domain, which, by the way, I loved Binary Domain.
It was a great game.
I absolutely loved it. And I also really, really enjoyed the crazy, weird interactions with your teammates, which I think can be really developed into other stuff. And Journey, and Diablo 3, and Max Payne 3, which I just started playing and is like,
it's so good.
There's something about a Rockstar game. Like, granted, they love their dark side stuff, and they have a certain pastiche that they play from, right? It's like, it's always the same sort of stuff. It's always like these dark heroes, and there's something that's gone wrong, and it's at least across like Red Dead and Grand Theft and Max Payne. What's interesting about Max Payne 3 to me is that it feels like the reverse of what I would have expected. Of you have a cool dramatic situation, and then from that there's a graphic novel interpretation. It feels like they took a graphic novel and turned it back into a drama. It's kind of strange because it's not Max Payne anymore. It's a cover-based shooter.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy that game very much.
You didn't?
To be honest
with you. Yeah. Because I went back and I was looking at that, and you didn't really enjoy it.
No.
And I'm curious now that I'm playing it, why did you not enjoy it?
I felt like, I don't know, Tony Scott vision of the game, it was almost too much.
You have to explain what you mean by a Tony Scott.
Well, the late director actually sadly died this year. His visual style, especially of late, his last four or five movies, were all very much of the same visual style as Max Payne. It's that strange over-filtered.
So there's a lot of grit in the screen.
Yeah.
You get a sort of sense of it being a video that you're watching.
Yeah, and this and the text on the screen and subtitles and the way that they were presented graphically. That all was an interesting choice, but I found it to be a bit much. And I found the gunplay itself to be, as you said, the cover-based shooter part of it, it just wasn't the fun Max Payne that I had grown to love in the first two games.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah. So
I agree with you that it's not as fun and adrenaline-based jump, dive, turn on bullet time,
right,
be crazy in a comic book panel.
You'll
Max
die
Payne.
If you play that way in this game.
Well, you die a lot.
Yeah.
I've died a lot. And at first, and Ariel will attest to this, at first I was super angry and frustrated because I was like, shit, I keep dying all the time. And it was really pissing me off. And by the way, there are technical problems with the game. There are times when you're in cover and the game flat out breaks and you're stuck in cover. You can't get out of cover. You can't pull your gun. You can't do anything. It's literally broken.
Never had those problems.
I had
technical
it happen.
Problems?
I've had that happen a number of times. I've had it happen
That's
three or four times. That having been said, it's interesting because Max Payne 3 is no longer really a Max Payne game that I thought it was. It's given Max Payne something new and different. It's like now it's as if the character out of the comic book pages suddenly became a dramatic character in a real scenario. And that's a little strange, but I kind of like it. And their engine, something they do that is really, really spectacularly interesting to me in Max Payne 3 is this ability to be in cutscenes, which we've seen before because you're in-engine, but really seamlessly transition in and out of gameplay moments.
Yeah.
So you're at once, say, they like to use this deal where a lot of times where you're covering someone as a sniper and then someone else is doing something and you see it's a very cool ability to get caught up in the moment because the characters you see are carrying the weapons they're carrying. They are in the positions they're in. They're in the animations they're in, yet you're jumping from camera position to camera position the way the director wants you to be. And I really like that. I think it's really cool. Mm. It's a really cool portend of what we can do in the future for storytelling, for game cinematic storytelling, while still letting me be in control of stuff and still letting me be in control of what happens.
Yeah. You made a lot of good points, and I think that, you know, I don't disagree that there was changes, but I think that those changes reflect the changes that the character has gone through in this story arc of Max Payne. And one of the things that I really liked about the game was that how it forced you to rethink the way that you would approach these situations. You can't just stay in cover in one spot in many situations in that game. You have to get up and move around and really use the environment. And I really, the first time you do the playthrough, it's maybe frustrating, but then you go, hey, the game is forcing me to adapt to the situation and I have to learn how to play through this maybe differently than I played through previous games. And I appreciated that it was challenging, but I know that we have to to wrap and you're looking at the story, but I could talk about games.
You can talk about games.
I'm just pulling up the games.
I do want. I know I mentioned this before we started. I do have a top five most overlooked games, which we can talk about in the next episode. I guess
game of the year will hold over. But what's your top five overlooked?
You know, it's funny because I was just thinking about it. I can only remember four of them right now. I can't remember
one of them is that
surprise,
overlooked.
Yes. here's what they are. They are Darksiders 2. Sorry, The Darkness 2.
The Darkness 2. So I think that's a very good one. The Darkness 2 was well received.
It's a good game.
Was a new developer and was summarily dismissed.
It's a good game.
We liked it. People said it was a good game.
That summer window's like, rough.
And it was just sort of like, gone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I also thought that Binary Domain was really overlooked.
You know, I loved that game. I knew it was going to be overlooked because it was very Japanocentric and like you just knew where it was going. It was Sega. It was Platinum. It was like obviously not.
It wasn't Platinum.
No, it wasn't Platinum.
It was the Yakuza team.
Sorry, yeah, it was Negoshi. Sorry.
I love how the overlooked games have been so overlooked already, even at the table.
Stupid whiskey.
I also, and now there's probably going to be a lot of disagreement with me here, but I also thought that Kingdoms of Amalur was really overlooked as a quality game.
Sold over a million. I can't give you overlooked on that.
That's fine. That's, like I said, it was debatable. This other one, I actually was recommended by a friend of mine called Super Hexagon, and I totally agreed.
I can't give you overlooked on that either. It was a phenomenon. It was an iPhone phenomenon.
You consider it a phenomenon? Yeah. I don't think I say you say phenomenon. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
That's a challenging word. I would say you say that.
I would call it a supercolorfragilisticexpialidocious. Wouldn't you agree, Andrea?
Kanata? I'm going to beat you after this show.
I think within the iOS gaming community, you have a lot of games that become really popular really quickly and become really trendy.
Right, but that's one one community. I think the game community at large.
But if you miss it, it's like, I mean,
I think you have missed the tragically overlooked game of 2012.
Which is?
Dragon's Dogma.
I haven't even got there yet.
Scooped.
Also,
that was a darling.
Were you going to list that one?
It was the one she forgot.
That's how overlooked.
It is also it's also not on your list.
You did your four, by the way, so that's why I did your fifth for you. Well, you did four, Dragon Dogma.
Well, I thought I only did three. Did I do four?
And with that, see you next
and
week.
Next week, you get to hear all about our Game of the Years, and we're going to be even drunker than we are right now.
Hey, not drunk yet, okay, for the record.
I can't wait to hear you drunk then.
No, but you're right with Dragon's Dogma. It's a really fantastic game. And I really feel like it sold over a million copies.
Did it sell over a million?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even realize it. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it also included a Resident Evil 6 demo.
So I think a lot of people probably did get it for that.
I think it's especially overlooked if the demo included is more popular than the game itself.
Yeah, it's definitely overlooked. And I feel like it's possible that Sleeping Dogs could maybe even creep on that list if there was like a top 10. I think a lot of people don't even mention Sleeping Dogs when they talk about the best games of the year.
Capcom called Dragon's Dogma a really well done
game. Sleeping Dogs best game cover art this year, Stylish Stout. Good stuff.
All right, so before we close this episode, number one, thanks so much, everyone, for listening to us and bringing us along wherever you go and putting up with our craziness.
Shouting.
This was a particularly aggressive segment of the show.
and of course, big thanks to Jeff Kanata, who I really love that I have hair to do this show with.
Yay, thanks, we Jeff. All love Jeff.
Right back at you, buddy.
It is
the best.
By the way, a couple of people ask, like, when does Jeff get his show? Jeff has his show. It's this show. It's his show. And it's your show, which we have one more story here from Philippe Boucher, who's been great to us and has had lots of comments. And then we're going to do a quick NFL tailgate because there is a slim outside chance that Andrea could eclipse Del Rio.
So can I.
I'm in second place.
So basically.
Tied for second place with me.
Andrea, I'm not tied, am I?
I thought you were.
We're
not picking all the way through the playoffs.
We'll do it.
You got the standings in there?
We'll do a special playoffs.
We'll do special playoffs.
Regular season doesn't actually count that much.
They're not even paying attention to us.
That's because pizza.
Del Rio, you have the standings for the pickups? Kanata isn't tied with me, is he? Is he tied?
That's what it says on that. We're not in the tailgate yet. Let's wrap this shit up. What are we doing?
Philippe's story says,
Damn it, he's tied with me.
Philippe says, I think my best gaming Christmas memory comes from Christmas of 97 when I was just 4 years old. Now, I'm a little skeptical here because I don't remember shit about when I was 4 years old. Do you guys, anyone 4 years old?
Yeah, well, I'm
I
much younger.
I had a dog.
So yes.
Black poodle.
You are much younger.
Yeah.
I'll admit to not remembering much before that time. All I know is that I definitely had an SNES, and I was super into Super Mario World, a console and game collection. My mom then gave away to my cousin, who broke the lot. Pouty face. Anyway, it was 97, and I woke up on Christmas morning full of excitement, and I ran to my parents' bedroom. Unfortunately, my memory fails me as to what time it was, and probably shouted about my excitement at it being Christmas. And my dad got out of bed and stumbled over to where they had hidden the present, whilst I literally did the whole jumping on the bed thing. He passes me over the wrapped box, and I open it to find my brand new Nintendo 64 with GoldenEye bundle and a copy of Super Mario 64. I don't think I did anything else for the whole of the next year, while my memory sees me opening the Ocarina of Time at Christmas and just loving everything about the game. The Deku Tree, the first step into the Hyrule Fields, feeling terrified by the Redeads. Supposed to be Redeads or Red Deads? It's supposed to be Redeads.
I think it's Redeads.
Redeads. Yeah, I think so.
Everything about that game just mind-blowing me. Goddamn Nintendo Rare, making my Christmas. In fact, this will probably be the first year where I haven't been really excited about receiving a Nintendo product for Christmas. Super Mario Sticker Star seems pretty cool, but something tells me it won't be as inspiring to those as those early Christmases were. And yes, I really was four and playing GoldenEye. I think you guys can vouch for me that I turned out pretty okay. Right?
Right, guys?
You better say yes or else.
Say yes or else. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Holiday special is closed. Hope you are enjoying a fantastic holiday season. We will be back next week with the rest of this debauchery and crazy show. We'll talk about Game of the Year. We'll talk about 2013. We'll talk about new consoles. We'll talk about trends for 2013.
And predictions!
We'll get Jeff to make some crazy-ass predictions, which you will forget, but then someone will hold him accountable for.
Google Glass Games!
Game Boy 2.0.
And finally, at the end of this, we will have the tailgate in which Andrea will have a chance to catch up with Del Rio if he's foolhardy enough to make any bad choices. So stick around. And if you're not staying around, thanks so much for joining us. That's your weekend confirmed, your holidays confirmed, and we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, Hangaway. I need a drink, Alizé. I need a drink, Hangaway. I need a drink, Champagne. I can't drink all by myself. I'm in need of y'all help. I need a drink, absolutely. I need a drink, it's not. I need a drink, Hennessy. I need a drink, in a tonic. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew only know.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices. All right, we are ready to do a little end of season. Admittedly, it's week 16. There's still 17 to go. But, you know, nobody plays on week 17 anyway. So here we go, folks. It is a last chance to catch up with Del Rio, who is in the lead at 27 and 17 ahead of Andrea.
Damn you.
You need to bet for real, dude.
Wait. How far ahead of me is he?
Money.
All three games. I'm so awesome.
So basically,
I won the pool last week.
Did
you notice that?
I did.
You did.
Jeff
you
won.
Ass.
No, Jeff won our bigger
our money
pool that we're in.
I mean,
pool.
Don't gamble, kids.
Also, I'm
wait,
also,
you guys had a pool?
Playoffs.
You didn't ask me?
I'm in the playoffs.
Sure. We can be losing money at this point, Andrea.
And I believe you are
it.
As well.
I went 3-0 last week.
So basically, here's what has to happen. Jeff and Andrea need to go 3-0, and Del Rio needs to go 0-3. So,
sorry. Oh, shit.
All right, so.
Dave, you are in control of your destiny. So we're going to let
I
you,
love Destiny.
I'm putting you on the line here. Basically,
not only a stripper, but
they've got to pick against you. They've got to pick against you.
I hope they do.
So I'm starting it off with New Orleans at Dallas. Dallas minus two.
Oh, ooh. Shit.
New Orleans at Dallas. Wow. Dallas in a playoff fight now.
Yes.
Cowboys
yes.
have a chance.
Are New Orleans out of it? They're out of it, right?
They're killing people.
No, they are killing people.
Mathematically
they're,
out of it, though?
I think they're in the hunt.
They got smoked the week before, and then they smoked.
They're not in the NFC hunt, no.
No, they're dreadful. They're
maybe
they're
in the AFC
dreadful.
Hunt, though. So.
Maybe.
It's wide open.
You think so? Are they
Dallas.
In the AFC?
Dallas doesn't play well at
that's
Dallas,
what I thought,
but
yeah.
I'm going to go with Dallas.
So you're going to go with that's Dallas
minus two.
So he's got Dallas minus two.
But then I have to fucking take New Orleans.
I assume you guys are taking New Orleans.
Drees! I've got breathe.
It's sort of anticlimactic considering they have to take everything.
No,
Dave
but,
doesn't
it, but
take.
It puts the it
your
puts
mom's
the,
anticlimactic.
All the way, weight James, is
only when you're wait.
I take New Orleans. I would actually take New Orleans if I had to pick, even though I'm.
You do have to
you're
pick,
money.
But you're in last place.
You're even money at 20. No, I'm in last place at 18. Oh, okay.
I'm even money right now, which is losing money in Vegas. But I would take New Orleans.
So we know what the last game is going to be. Yes. Oh, yeah, we know what the last game is going to be.
Oh, yes, we do,
it's
Pete Carroll.
Yes. Before that, what are we going to choose?
Bitch. Fake poke.
That guy's a douche. Did I say that already on the show?
Fourth and 35.
Pete Carroll's a
go
douche.
For the
he is a douche.
What other game should we
what's
choose?
Your deal? I love Pete Carroll.
What do we have?
Even though I...
There's, I don't know. There's just not that many
Wait,
contender games.
Put the iPad down so we all can
who's
see.
Who's Pittsburgh playing? Because they're in it, right?
Pittsburgh is playing. Yeah. Cincinnati-Pittsburgh is a good
That's
game.
That's a good game.
Pick
okay,
that
let's
one.
Pick that.
So there we go. Let's
That's
do
a
that.
Tough one, too. Shit.
Okay.
Why did I say that out loud?
It's Cincinnati.
Jeff's picking first.
No, nope, you're on the hot seat, bud.
You are in the top spot. You need to pick first.
Where's it at?
Dave, maybe it's either. Where's you it at? You win it or lose it. It's Cincinnati at Pittsburgh.
Oh, in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh
What's
minus.
The line?
Pittsburgh Four. Minus 3.5.
Pittsburgh minus 3.5?
At home.
Holy shit.
Cincinnati at Pittsburgh.
Playing for a
playoff berth. Minus 3.5.
Man, I think that's going to be a 3-point game. I'll go Pittsburgh. I'll take the money.
He's going Pittsburgh. So, Andrea, you and Kanata have...
I actually wanted to take Cincy in that.
I wanted to take Pittsburgh. But
James okay. is using his phone to like cover notes he's writing to Andrea.
He's trying to give me notes, but I've disagreed.
Not that it matters. I'm just trying to pick... I want to pick before...
It says take off your shirt, let's be honest.
All right, so the good news is the last game...
Well, we're wrapping it
and
up
he's
with...
he's pointing towards me.
I hope to God, actually.
Ooh, you got some nice fucking triceps there.
Yeah, I
nothing
work hard
would
on my
be better. Nothing would be better than Dave losing the first two games because...
Sunday night.
It's national TV.
Seattle, Washington.
San Francisco 49ers on the road again.
12th
I
man.
Was. I could not have been more wrong if I had tried about last weekend.
About New England?
New England.
God, I thought New England was going to smoke them.
Me too.
Fuck you know, I'm a 49ers
I would like
fan.
To point out, if you listen to that episode, I was right for three quarters. I said they were going to hold them under 20 and hold
right
Brady under 200
quarters.
Yards. And for three quarters, they did. And
oh,
then
damn, bro.
Damn fourth quarter.
Freaking prevent defense.
It turns out they play football for four quarters, so damn it.
Turns out.
They're like
well,
the Amish.
Regardless, money clearly coming in on the money loves San Francisco now because this is San Francisco at Seattle. Seattle plus one.
Ooh. The first team to do 50-plus points 2 weeks in a row since the 30s.
Yes.
Some shit like that.
So I think the 50s.
And we know which way you're
we
going.
We all remember the 1950 teams of Chicago and St. Louis.
I would like to point out that Pete Carroll's a douche.
Like
so there's nothing really to talk about here unless you guys want
to
talk some smack because
we are talking smack.
We know 49er fans going 49ers.
That's right.
You know what? This is a scary game. The Seahawks have been riding high for 2 weeks, everything going
yeah,
their way.
Yeah, they've been kicking playing dirt home. In the fucking wimp's
face. I would love it if maybe take San Francisco here so that Jeff has to take Seattle.
Oh, shit. So I'm going to go out on a limb and take San Francisco.
Are you really?
No, I'm not. That would be awesome, but in my better judgment, I can't.
Here's the thing. Fucking Pete Carroll, the bully, has been picking on these little teams and running up the score like a fucking asshole.
Oh, and Jim Harbaugh won't shake somebody's hand.
I love Pete Carroll.
And just like
Seahawks, but have
just like
been a fucking
Stanford and USC, Harbaugh's going to bring it.
Oh yeah,
real
Harbaugh's
fucking
the class
defense.
Of the fucking NFC. Hey, let's bench the guy that just won NFC Player of the Week. Hey, you've done a great job.
Player
Fuck
of the
you.
Week. Player
I'm going with
of the
bitch.
Week. That's the word.
I'm going to put a cap in Kaepernick's
in case it wasn't clear. Maybe just took Seattle.
Boom.
Andrea and Jeff just took San Francisco.
Well,
and,
we have to.
Who are you taking? Who are you taking, James?
Sorry, I don't give
I would take
time.
San Francisco.
I would Goddamn absolutely right. take San Burn Francisco
it.
Over Seattle.
Who would I? Would I it doesn't even matter. I'm 18
no,
and 26.
San Francisco already got the rough spot out. Seattle's got to come back down to earth.
Your face.
Maybe. You're going down.
This
I'm just going
to
say.
NFC West
whoa,
right
whoa,
here.
Whoa.
You're I'm going down, Del Rio.
I would curse Del Rio here because I think Seattle D at home.
Damn you, Garnett.
Well done.
Pick the Niners.
And I still don't think Kaepernick's for real, so I don't see him doing it 2 weeks in a row. And if he does, then I will give it up, and I will say, like, fine, who knows who Alex Smith is a backup for next year.
Defense.
Alex Smith is going defense. To the Jets next year, and
good
he's going
to
be screwed.
Oh, God.
Can't wait to playoffs on the record reset.
All right, let's go eat pizza.
All right.
Yeah.
Happy Christmas, everybody. We'll be back next week.